Joe Rogan Podcast, check it out.
The Joe Rogan Experience.
Train by day, Joe Rogan Podcast by night, all day.
First of all, how the fuck do you make 185 pounds? How is that even possible?
Diet and exercise.
But you're so big. What do you walk around at?
I'm about 230 right now.
What is the process of you getting down to 185?
Yeah, I definitely can't do it on short notice. It takes like a whole 8 weeks unless I, you know, have to kill myself.
Jeez.
Which, and I used to do that. I'd just not eat for a week and sit in a sauna forever and then wonder why after 3 minutes, like, dude, I'm fucking tired, dude. Fuck,
yeah.
Fuck.
Well, how much of a performance impact does it have on you, even if you, like, take off, even if you have 2 solid months to prepare and lose the weight?
Yeah, I feel good. I don't think it has a performance issue. I know that some dudes, they cut weight, they don't do it the right way, and I think it kind of, like,
makes them
more fragile,
yeah.
You know? But I haven't had that experience.
So for you, as long as they give you 2 months, you can do it, but... How good does food taste after those 2 months?
Everything in my life is extreme. Like if I don't have a fight coming up, I'm a burger, cheeseburger, pizza, beer kind of guy. Hardly drink water. But then when I am, don't eat anything green. But then when I am training for a fight, you know, it's just the exact opposite. Nothing but water. You know, I count my calories and.
Do you have like a meal prep company that?
Yeah, those. I think it's Icon Meals that the UFC has.
Yeah.
And it's awesome because, like, each meal, you can, like, tell how this has, like, the macronutrients on there and how many calories. So I just wear, like, a heart rate monitor, and it tells me how many calories I burn per workout. So I just go home. Okay, I burn 500. I can only eat 300. And, you know.
Have you ever thought about, like, fuck it, I'm going to go heavyweight?
Dude, when I fought Darren Stewart the second time, he was like, let's do heavyweight. And for a second, I was like, man, fuck that. Let's just do heavyweight instead of, you know, light heavyweight. And not cut anyway. But I was like, if I show up a heavyweight, dude, I'm going to have a big old belly. I ain't going to be able to fight a heavyweight, I don't think. It ain't going to work. My cardio is going to be shit.
So when you get to 185 and you do it correctly, you have better cardio?
I think so. I really don't get tired in fights. So, yeah, I feel good. And the middleweights, for my career, I think middleweight is the way to go because they're not as durable as the light heavyweights. And the light heavyweights, man, those motherfuckers are big.
They're like
6'3", 6'4". So it's like a stature thing for me. I'm only 6'1", so I'd be, you know, punching up at everybody.
What would you think if they eliminated weight cutting? Because, you know, there's been talk about that, mostly for me. I think everyone's doing it, but what it is essentially is like sanctioned cheating. You're pretending you're 185 pounds. Yeah. You're about 185 for what, an hour?
Yeah, the shortest amount of time possible.
Yeah, and then when you fight, what do you think you weigh?
Well, I've been as heavy as 225 on fight night.
Wow.
For an 85 fight.
That's crazy.
But I think it works backwards. Yeah, I'm bigger, but when I'm that heavy, like when I fought Andre Muniz, I was like 225, but I just felt like heavy. You know, I was like, dude, I don't know.
You put too much on.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I was like, dude, I'm not moving like I was getting ready for the fight. So when that happens, it's like, damn, I just kind of
Charles Oliveira just, they just did this thing where they weighed him on fight night versus weigh-in, and he's 183 on fight night. He fights at 155.
Yeah, you look at him, you wouldn't think he weighs that.
No, he's pretty stout. He's a stout dude. I mean, he's long and lean and everything.
He's
but,
like broad, but front to back, he's a thin guy.
Well, I think he's maximized for the weight class. There's guys that, like, they're maximized for that weight class. Like, John Jones at 205 is a perfect example. Maximized for that weight class. The perfect physique for that weight class. Khamzat Chimaev at 170, maximized. It's like the perfect amount of length, but strong as shit.
Sure.
You know, there's like a lot. There's a lot of advantages for that.
Yeah, you know, those guys, especially at the top, you know, they're much bigger for the most part than everybody else in the weight class. Like, Usman's a big motherfucker for the weight class. John Jones, he's 6'4". You know, they call him, like, his legs look skinny, but he's not a skinny guy.
No.
Just from, like, the knee down.
He's
like,
just
he
got
doesn't
tiny
have any calves.
Calves.
Exactly.
Yeah, which is crazy. We talked about that yesterday. Like, all the weightlifting he does, those things don't grow. It's just weird.
You know, when I first started fighting, they were like, oh, I was like 240, like football big. They're like, oh, you're going to end up fighting at 85. I was like, bullshit. I'm not cutting weight like that. And then my buddy Marcus Brimage fought McGregor on the same card that Cormier and John Jones fought the first time. So we went, and I saw those two fight, and I was like, 85 might be the move. 85 might be the move. Motherfuckers are big, dude.
What was it like the first time you did it?
Dude, it was awful. Because, like, no one told me how to do it. They were like, oh, dude, I would run, and I'd be like 210, and like, oh, you can just cut the rest in water. So I'm like, all right. So the first time, dude, I sat in a sauna for like 6 hours. And my coach at the time, I was like, dude, I'm done with this. I don't care how much I weigh right now. I'm out of here. And he was like, no. I'm like, dude, listen, I'm getting out of here, whether it's through you or around you. You have about 3 seconds to make this decision. And he just stepped to the side. And, you know, of course, I missed weight. I was like 189. But I was like, dude, I'm not doing that shit. And then so I did that a few times. And then I met my wife, and, you know, she's into the fitness thing, and she's like, you're not a smart person. This is not how you should be doing this. So she started measuring my meals, and I was actually eating more, you know, because it makes your metabolism faster or whatever, but smaller meals.
Mm.
And then, dude, I just became easier.
So what was your transition from football into MMA? Like, what motivated that?
So we won a national championship my senior year, and so I think everybody knows that if you do make it to the NFL, probably not going to be there for long. So I was like, okay, so if the NFL thing doesn't work out, at least I can come back to Alabama. Somebody, an alumni, will have a job for me, you know, but that's not what happened. So I ended up being a janitor. I was cleaning apartments, cleaning factories, working with meth heads and, whoa, you know, a drug addict, like, with a water lance. Like, this thing has, like, 2,000 pounds of pressure. Like, it cuts sheet metal.
Really?
And, you know, some dude, like, nodding off, you know, fucking around. So it was dangerous. And I just found myself being, like, mad and frustrated that, you know, here I am living in the same town that just a year ago we won a national championship, and I'm doing this kind of work. So, you know, fighting all the time, drinking, abusing drugs, just kind of mad. And walking around my fist balled up all the time. I was like, man, eventually something's going to happen to me. I'm going to get shot, you know, just, you know, doing stupid stuff. And so I just walked into a gym, started training.
So you were about 21?
Yeah.
21 when you first started training?
Mm-hmm.
No training prior at all?
No, like 24.
Oh, really?
Yeah, because I, like, chased the dream, the football dream. Mm-hmm. I went to Colorado, played arena ball, and, you know, played in Canada for a little bit. And, you know, finally I was just like, dude, if it's not the NFL, then it's not worth it.
So what was holding you back from achieving your goals in the NFL?
I just don't think I was big enough, fast enough, good enough. And, you know, you always kind of, like, lie to yourself when you're younger. It's like, oh, fuck yeah, dude, I'm going to make it, I'm going to play. And then, you know, you kind of get shit on and, you know, so you just walk around bitter until you find something else to do. At least that was my experience anyways.
And so was MMA a thought in your mind as a career, or was it something you were just doing to blow off steam?
Initially, I started doing jiu-jitsu, and I was like, oh, this is cool. You know, I can go, like, wrestle and, like, get it out, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And I want to see what it's like to, you know, throw punches and stuff. And so I walked into another gym, and first day in there, the coach walks up to me. He's like, can you fight? You know, any 24-year-old male, and you ask him if they fight, he's like, fuck yeah, I can fight, hell yeah. He's like, all right, cool, here are some gloves, go fight that guy, go spar that guy. And it was fucking Walt Harris, who was already a professional fighter, been training, been boxing.
Heavyweight.
Big motherfucker, yeah.
Like, yeah, Walt's
260, 6'4". And he beat me up in the nicest way possible. Like, I knew, like, if he was being for real, I knew what would happen to him.
Well, that's nice of Walt.
Yeah, and, like, you know, I had, like, those big football muscles, so I couldn't, you know, block anything down the middle. So I was just goosh, 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 goosh. And, but, dude, I fell in love with it. I was like, dude, it's going to be fun to, like, suck at something and then learn how to do it and then not suck. And, you know, but I think that's, like, the biggest apprehension from other athletes coming into this, because who the fuck wants to be a white belt again? You know, you're already an elite athlete or, you know, played at the pinnacle of the sport. Now you got to go in there and take your licks again. Like,
Like a beginner.
Yeah. And so I think the ego kind of gets in the way of, you know, guys coming from other sports and girls coming from other sports and learning this stuff.
Well, even that even works in guys in combat sports that are learning MMA. Like guys who are kickboxers, they don't like to wrestle or do jiu-jitsu. They just want to learn how to get up. They just want to learn. That's a big common problem. So when they get in scrambles, they don't really know how to do anything offensively, so everything is defensive, which once your opponent realizes that everything is defensive, it's very much more relaxing for them.
Yeah, and they know they don't have a risk, so they can take more chances.
Exactly.
Worst case scenario, he gets up. I'm not going to get choked out by or whatever.
Yeah, it's like guys that surprise people. Like, Yuri Prohaska, when Yuri just tapped out Glover, like, who the fuck saw that coming, you know?
I think exhaustion kind of plays into, you know,
fifth round,
the 25th minute or 24th and a half minute.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, fuck, dude, I'm tired.
And, you know, Glover is 42 years old.
Yeah, sure.
Which, and he almost won that fight. All he had to do is play it safe in the fifth round. He would have won that fight.
Yeah, but.
Yeah.
Of course, yeah, like, it didn't work out for him, but as a fan.
Oh, yeah.
I don't want to see nobody play it safe, dude. Go for it.
Of course.
Fuck it.
Of course.
And that's just me as a fan being selfish. But if he did that, I'd be like, you know.
Yeah, it's funny when people do play it safe. Like Devin Haney's last fight, like last round, he played it safe. And he even talked about it. Like, I knew I had it in the bag, so I just took off the last round. And I was like, ooh.
Don't say that out loud.
Don't say that out loud.
Not on the microphone, dude. Yeah. Tell your coach that. Tell your mom that.
Yeah, but. I mean, he's in the money for these big, big fights like Lomachenko. And, you know, so after he beat Kambosos, you know, that was, you know, that was a pivotal fight for him. I understand taking it off the last round, but yeah, don't say that.
Yeah, yeah. Or say it in different ways, like, you know, I didn't want to, like, get hurt, or, you know, didn't want to risk breaking my hand. Or.
Yeah, maybe. I don't know. It's just, it's that kind of a fight. The Yuri Prohaska Glover Teixeira fight is the kind of fight that makes fans.
Sure,
like,
sure.
If you've never watched MMA before and you watch that crazy fucking fight, like, whew.
Especially how back and forth it was. I didn't think that Yuri would be as good on the ground and be able to get up and reverse position like he did.
Glover took a lot of chances. Like, he, like, dove on guillotines and wound up on the bottom when it didn't work out. There was a lot going on in that fight. I mean, that was not a play-it-safe fight. That was a wild fight.
Yeah. Me and my son were driving back from Yellowstone watching it on the phone. I was like, dude, I think I need to pull over, dude. I'm fucking been watching the phone more than I hit the fucking road. Like, shit.
Yeah, that's not good. He fights so strange. Yuri fights so strange. There's nobody like him in the sport because he's almost like fighting like a karate video game character.
And he's very unpredictable.
Yeah.
He doesn't have like a pattern. Well, like, it's not jab, cross, hook. It's
even his movements. And then he's leaping in with shots. Like, he almost moves around like a guy who wouldn't be good, but he's really good.
Yeah,
it's confusing. You know, it's like he's got his own style.
And he's got his little hair. He says it's an antenna.
For the flow.
Yeah.
To catch the flow. Yeah. And you see him working out in the woods, too. Like, ties pads around trees, and he's kicking and punching trees. Like, very strange.
Yeah.
He seems like a super odd dude. He was doing something that's not wise, though. Like, he was patting Glover, saying, good job. You're doing a good job. Like,
in the middle of the fight?
Yeah.
Oh.
And, you know, Mark Goddard was telling him, like, hey, you're playing a fucking dangerous game because that seems like you're tapping.
Yeah.
Like, what are you doing? Did you ever see any of that?
No. Like I said, I was driving. So
a lot of people were saying, like, this fight's bullshit. He tapped because it looked like he was like, hey, good job, good job.
But, like, did he have a submission in or?
No, man. He was like, he was on top of him.
That guy's not tapping to strikes, though.
No.
So you don't got to worry about that.
I don't think he's going to tap. I mean, unless he gets caught in something. But it's just, when you're watching it, I was like, what is happening here? Is he fucking tapping? Like, watch this. Here, referee, like, watch this. Look, see, he's on top. He's talking to him. Good job. See, look at that. Ooh. That's a fucking tap, man. That's a tap. Like, you can't do that.
Well, at least Glover.
He was congratulating, encouraging his opponent. Yeah, see, Mark Goddard said it's a risky game. But it's very clear what he was doing and intending. Let's celebrate the incredible feat from both gentlemen. It's interesting because you really can't do that. You can't. I mean, that because if Glover thought that was a tap,
if he stopped,
like he could, like that right there is a fucking tap, man. Like, you can't do that because, like, that's how I'm injured. Hey, my ribs are broken.
Pressure.
I gotta stop. You know, I mean, it's not a position where you normally would see somebody tap, but. Who the fuck knows what's going on?
Yeah.
You know, I sometimes.
Mark heard what he was saying, so he's like, oh, that's not a tap.
But
that's
still,
a tap.
That is tapping. Like, you know, you can't just fake quit.
Yeah, yeah.
That's like fake quitting.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
Who did that? Fabricio Verdum in the PFL. I forget who he was fighting, but the guy
faked out.
Yeah.
Right?
And then he stopped, and then...
And then he wound up losing by TKO.
Yeah, but I think it got ruined no contest at the end, though.
That's horrible, though. That's horrible shit. You remember that happened in the UFC early on? It was Murilo Bustamante and Matt Lindland. Mm-hmm. And Murilo Bustamante tapped him twice. He tapped him once with an armbar, and Lindland said, "I didn't tap." And Big John McCarthy, this is like... The UFC in the early days, they were kind of like, "Oh, let's do it again." You know? There was a few.
Are
of those.
You sure? You're
yeah,
done.
This
You're
is
done.
A fight. So this is Bustamante was a bad motherfucker back then. He was one of the very first jiu-jitsu guys who was also like really dangerous with stand-up, and he was one of Carlson Gracie's like top black belts, like really technical jiu-jitsu guy. And what's that?
This video is not going to show up, so I was going to stop.
Oh, it's not going to show the sub.
I don't think so.
So he got him down. Oh, this is the finish. This is the final finish. He caught him in the guillotine. So the guillotine is how he finished him. See, so this is tapping, and that, you know, amazed that he didn't hold on to it because Lindland had fake tapped earlier. So that's the third round. So he tapped him in the second round with an armbar and then tapped him in the third round with a guillotine.
How you fucked that up? Now, I went to a fight in Macon, Georgia, like just like a local promotion. This kid had the other guy in the guillotine. And he did look like he was asleep. So the ref stops the fight, and the guy's like, "Hey, what the fuck?" And he started them again, like from the stand-up. Like, you go to your corner, you go to your corner, and start. And I'd have been like, "Man, fuck that, dude. He tapped."
Yeah.
They said because nobody had entered the cage that they could keep it going. And I'm like, "No, dude, at least you have to give me my position back."
Yeah, give me the neck again.
Yeah, the fight. Yeah. No, when I started, I earned that position.
Did you ever see Conan Silveira and Sakuraba?
Uh-uh.
Sakuraba got hit with an uppercut and dropped down for a single. So he's on like a low single, and Big John, again, stops the fight. And Sakuraba's like, "What the fuck are you doing?" And then it's in Japan, so everybody started freaking out. Yeah. And so they said, "Don't worry, we'll have him fight again." So later on in the night, they fought a second time. Yeah, they fought a second time. And this time, Sakuraba got Conan in an armbar. And so this was like, I want to say this was like 98. It was like right when I quit. So he got him in an armbar and tapped him. And it was fucking crazy because nobody had ever seen a Brazilian jiu-jitsu black belt get tapped. And Sakuraba was like way smaller than him too. Like Sakuraba was probably under 200 pounds. And Conan was a big guy. Like Conan had fought in extreme fighting, and you know that's what he had fought Maurice Smith then.
You think they got paid twice?
I don't think they did.
I'm not doing the second one for free, dude. Fuck that.
That's a good point. Fuck that. That's a very good point. But this was a big moment. But you go back and you watch like even like top guys, like everyone was like a little sloppy then. Like, technique is so much more refined now. Everything is so different. Even, like, if you go and watch jiu-jitsu tournaments, like top-level jiu-jitsu tournaments from, like, 94, 95, and then watch them today in 2022, it's incredible how much progress has been
That's
made.
Like the evolution.
Yeah.
Like, how long do you think Sakuraba had been playing or training jiu-jitsu?
Well, he actually was training catch wrestling. That's what's interesting about Sakuraba. There's a lot of those guys that were pro wrestlers in Japan. Mm-hmm. But in pro wrestling in Japan, they do a lot of like hard fights. Like pro wrestling in Japan has a history of real fights. Like sometimes they would have shoots or they would have works. And so like if you ever want to talk to Josh Barnett, is the master of this shit. He'll tell you all about that because, you know, he's a big pro wrestling fan.
I was training at Danaher's yesterday. And I was talking to this kid from Louisville, Kentucky. And I was like, "Oh, how long you been training?" 16 years. And I was like, "How old are you?" 24.
Whoa.
So I was like, "Dude, I've been training with Helio Seneca since I was 6. And I'm like, that's the difference in the game.
Oh,
you know?
Yeah.
When you learn something when you're 6, 6 to 24 is different than 24 to,
yes,
you know.
How old are you now?
35.
How long do you think you're going to be doing this?
I probably got 5 or less fights left.
5 or less fights. What do you think you're going to do when you stop?
I got a lot of things that I'm pivoting right now, kind of working my way I know I'm in the twilight of my career. Like, it's no secret. And I started buying real estate. Got about 15 houses now.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. So a lot of people always, like, bitch about, like, fighter pay and stuff. But I'm just like, what are you doing with your money?
Right, right.
You
know,
if you go to, like, some of the people's, like, Instagram, like, who bitching about fighter pay, go to their Instagram and see what it is that they're spending their money on. You have, like, five Frenchie dogs. These are, like, $5,000 to $8,000 dogs. Of course you're going to be broke, you know? So I just, like, put everything into real estate. And so I don't even have to fight anymore.
That's awesome.
You know, I do it because I like it. I do it because I like the competition. I like the training. I just like doing it. But whenever I'm ready, I can dip whenever I want to.
You're a tough motherfucker, man, because I've watched a lot of your fights, and I've been a fan of your fights, your wins and your losses. But when you fought Khalil Roundtree, and he was leg kicking the shit out of you, and you didn't even flinch, I was like, damn. That was one of the most impressive, like, in a losing performance, one of the most impressive displays of toughness.
Maybe I should play poker, because that shit was hurting. You know, I had a poker face.
He kicked so fucking hard.
But yeah, I mean, it hurt, but it wasn't like dismantling.
Right.
You know, it's not like my leg wasn't compromised.
Right.
She was just stinging and in pain. So I just feel like toughness is like a decision sometimes. Like, mm-hmm. Okay, you feel pain, but are you hurt? No, okay. And I also think that, like, just naturally I have a higher, like, pain threshold maybe than most people. So, you know, that second round got pretty crazy. I think he dropped me, like, four times. And in the corner, the lady, the commissioner, the doctor or whatever, is like, are you okay? And I was like, dude, is she watching this fight? Of course I'm not okay, dude. Fuck. So I tried to ignore her. She's like, yeah, okay, I'm good.
It's interesting how boxing has three knockdown rules in some fights and some commissions. Like, I wonder if they've ever thought about instituting something like that in MMA promotion.
I don't know. I hope not, you know, because I would hate for the fight to get stopped. You know, just for me,
right?
Just because, you know, I got dropped four times. It's not like I got up and I, like, you know, didn't have my equilibrium or whatever.
Right.
Yeah, I got dropped, but, like, as soon as I hit the ground, I was like, oh, shit, fuck, how'd I get here? Yeah. fuck.
Do you think some of that toughness comes from football? Because you cannot play football at a high level without being tough.
I think maybe kind of the way I grew up. You know, I'm 5 out of 6.
Oh
yeah, and four boys. So,
oh,
yeah.
That's it.
So, you know,
that's a recipe for bad motherfuckers. Yeah. Get a bunch of boys, let them grow up together, beating the shit out of each other,
and just for their entertainment too. Like, I think my oldest brother, he'd be like, "I'm bored. Hey, Eric, let's go climb this tree and jump out."
Oh wow!
But then he wouldn't jump; it would just be me.
Oh,
let's go get on the roof and jump, or, you know, whatever. I'm like, okay, cool. Let's go.
Do they kind of take credit for you fighting now?
They should. They should. But I've always been, like, a scrappy dude. Like, I've always, like, enjoyed it. Like, wrestled, you know, fought a lot, you know, just being a boy growing up, you know.
But no training at all? No martial art, no karate, nothing?
JV level experience wrestling.
Wow. So when you had your first fight, how long had you been training for?
A month. And I fought twice.
In a night?
Yeah. I think my coach at the time, I'm sure that he was on dope looking back. He'd just be pale, and we didn't do nothing but ones and twos, didn't wrestle, didn't do anything. He would hardly show up. And, you know, they were like, hey, you want to fight? I was like, all right, cool. And so, dude, I like this is very, like, a dark time in my life, you know. So I was like, drove up to Huntsville, Alabama, smoking Newports. And,
Newports the day of the fight?
Oh, yeah.
Wow.
And, man, my coach didn't even show up. Didn't have any cornermen. This is in a boxing ring in a bar, in a smoky bar in the middle of nowhere, Alabama. And so I was just like, hey, sir, do you mind, you don't have to say anything, just do you mind pulling the stool out in between rounds? I boxed one fight, lost a split decision, and then fought MMA, knocked the guy out in 50 seconds, and I was like, I think that's it.
In the same night?
In the same night.
So you had a boxing match, and then you had an MMA fight in the same night. Oh, my God.
No coach.
No athletic commission either, I guarantee
Zero.
You.
Yeah. Zero.
Holy shit, that, what kind of fucking promotion is that?
Dude, just some rednecks putting together a boxing match or a fight. They called me on while I was on the way up there. They're like, hey, they want you to have your blood work, you know, done within like the last 6 months. Have you had your blood work done? I was like, yeah, sure. Like 2 months ago I did. But, dude, of course I didn't.
They didn't check.
And then as I'm driving, I'm just like, dude, what if the guy that I'm fighting did the same thing? And, but he does actually have, like, hepatitis or AIDS.
Right.
So I was like, well, I guess, you know, better make it quick, I guess.
Don't let him get on top of you and bleed on you. Jesus Christ. So many people have those stories of these wild promotions. He's like.
And dude, I had no idea what I was doing. Like, how much do you think you could learn in a month with zero previous training
and a shitty coach who's probably on dope?
Yeah. Fucking like nodding off and shit in the middle of practice.
There's a lot of those coaches like that out there.
I was like, fuck, dude, what was I doing?
A buddy of mine, his kickboxing coach, he was on heroin. He found out by going to the bathroom when he found needles in the bathroom. He's like, what the fuck is going on?
I think that's rock bottom.
Heroin's a weird one, right? When you're shooting heroin,
yeah.
Oof.
I guess you could like
snort
it.
He was the same thing. He was nodding off all the time and shit, and he kind of suspected.
Yeah, you all right, dude? Fucking slap him in the face. Like, wake up, dude. This is practice.
It's just that world. The world of the heroin user is such a strange world, because that is one of those drugs where, like, you there is no pre. Like, you could do coke, I guess. You could party and still have your life together.
Sure.
Like, allegedly, Conor McGregor does coke. You know, allegedly. I don't know if he does coke. Seems like kind of guy who might do a little coke.
Believable.
Oh, yeah. But that's like a party drug that sometimes people can do and be fine. But if you heard that Conor was shooting heroin, you'd be like, what?
Don't believe it.
You'd be like, what? You're like, oh, man, he needs some help. Someone needs to help him.
Well, let me see his arms. Let me check those fingernails.
That's when you're hurting. That's when you're really hurting, when you're shooting heroin. That is like, that's one of the lowest of low. Like, if you're just making that commitment to puncture your vein and pump that shit in there.
I think that some like the process, getting the spoon, tying off, melting it, you know, putting it in the syringe, and then going to space.
Going to space. I've never done any opiates other than when I had knee surgery. I had a, they gave me a button that you could press,
a little morphine
and you get
drip.
A little morphine drip. And I remember hitting that button. It's like, oh, I get it. Oh, now I know why people like this. It was so relaxing.
Dude, I don't know about. I don't think that would. I would never do heroin, but I think I would probably smoke opium though.
Well, this is a friend of mine. His name is Dr. Carl Hart, and he's actually a professor at Columbia. And he started off his career as a clinical researcher, and he was very straight laced. Never did any drugs. And then as time went on, he started realizing that our perceptions on drugs are way off. And what, you know, people think of heroin is like being terrible for you, you're going to keep. This is for you, too, if you want it.
Oh, appreciate it.
Some caffeine. And he recreationally uses drugs and talks about it. But he's a legitimate professor. So when he talks about it, he can talk about it from a pharmacological perspective. He can talk about the actual reaction that the human body has on, you know, to these drugs, and he knows it. But he like openly says, like, I snort a little heroin every now and then. I like
really?
It. Yeah. Yeah. He's like, what?
I think we all let that DARE officer down, man. We all let him down. He's very disappointed.
Yeah, I guess. Well,
he lied.
No to drugs. Like, which drugs? Which drugs? Am I going to say no to coffee? Get the fuck out of here. Like, what are we saying no to? Saying no to alcohol? Always? Forever? I can't even have champagne at a wedding?
Yeah.
Fuck out of here.
Yeah. Yeah, but you know, there are like functioning, you know, alcoholics and people who can do these things. But I think at the end of the day, the drug wins, whatever it is, if you have that.
If you're an addict.
Yeah,
but I think addiction is more than just physical. You know, it's the choice to start doing so much drugs that your body becomes dependent upon it. Those choices are usually not choices that are made by people that are, like, having a good life.
Sure.
You know?
Or that maybe their life is too good.
Well, maybe it's a lot of it is escape, you know?
Yeah.
Like, it's trauma as a kid, like somebody, you know, like sexual abuse, that kind of shit. Like, that's a lot of people that get hooked on drugs.
But, man, I think you could probably do stuff to get off of that. I think like mushrooms is good to like get over that. DMT, wildest ride I've ever had, or you know, I smoked that toad before, and dude, I think that just kind of completely eliminates your ego and kind of helps you get over that kind of stuff.
Isn't it hard to believe that it's real? Like when you do it, you're like, how can I get there that quick? How can I just smoke this thing and then 15 seconds later I'm there?
Dude, I did it like three times in one session, like a small, medium, and you know, blast an astronomical dose. And like the second one, I was like, man, I always hear people like astro, like, oh, they're talking about astro projecting and this sound. I was like, whatever. I'm not sure if I believe that, but dude, that shit is real.
Yeah.
And the third time I did it, I lay down and dude was just like Star Wars, just light speed.
Yeah.
Like, oh, fuck. I was in Cejudo's backyard when I did it.
Really?
And dude, he was like running around screaming. I was doing forward rolls in his yard. Because dude, I was like, dude, I just fucked up, dude. This is...
Yeah, I thought that,
I'm
too.
Dead.
I thought I was dead, too.
I was like, fuck. So, you know, you kind of, like, resist. So you're like, oh, fuck. So, and I was, like, running around his backyard, like, screaming at the top of my lungs, rolling around on the grass. Dude, when I woke up, I wasn't in the same place that I was. And I had, like, grass stains all over my hands and my clothes and stuff. And they're like, dude, are you okay? But, dude, it was like Nirvana. I was like, dude, don't touch me. Just fucking... Let me enjoy this moment, dude. I fucking face a nice cold grass and watching the grass grow. I like, fuck, dude, just give me a second. Let me take this in.
It's a reset, right?
Yeah.
It just changes what you think about life and reality. Just like that.
And for me, like, you know, sometimes you have like a hard time admitting things to yourself. But I was like, dude, you know, after that, I don't think that's an issue anymore. You know? And
like, what kind of things to yourself could you admit after that?
When I fought Thiago Santos, like, my style of fighting was much different before than it was after. And it's just because, you know, a lot of people are like, I want to take it to my limit. Well, I found my limit in that fight, and I never wanted to get to that place again. So
was that a 205 fight? Or
yeah. So I you know, kind of like... lied to myself, and it's like, oh, dude, you were just tired, you know, whatever. But then I go back and watch the fights after that, and the pace is slower, the output is slower, because I don't want to get to that, you know, level of exhaustion ever. And then you do that, and it's like, dude, fuck it, you know? If you get there, you get there, you know?
Yeah.
So, and, you know, I haven't been able to smoke weed ever since then. I smoke like five times, and I get like crazy paranoid and anxiety, and I'm just like...
After the DMT or after the fight?
After the DMT.
Really?
And I was like, it's not fun anymore.
Huh. It makes you crazy paranoid. Interesting.
Yeah. Like, I did it on the way to the airport. I smoked on the way to the airport, and, dude, I just could not stop thinking about death. I was like, dude, if I crash this car, if I do this. And I was like, on the airplane or in the airport, just in my head, like, going crazy. I was like, dude, I don't want to, like, I hope I don't act out, like, you know, kind of like a... go through that rolling around on the ground.
Those guys on TMZ.
Yeah. I was like, dude, they're going to lock me up in a mental institution. They're not going to be hearing shit about no toe. They're like, dude, this guy's fucking licking toes. Like, fucking put him in a straight jacket. Like, get him out of here. So it's just not it's not enjoyable anymore.
That's funny. That's my favorite way to travel. When I fly,
used to be mine too.
I'm almost always high. Like, when I lived in L.A., I was 40 minutes from the airport. And I would take a 200-milligram edible in my driveway. And I would go, let's go. And then I just had to get to the airport before it kicked in.
Yeah, I did that one time on a plane. And, dude, I just, you know, it was getting like, it was like too much. I don't remember how much I took, but I ate like a whole chocolate bar, however much was in that. And, dude, I fell asleep on the plane. I felt the plane take off. I woke up when it landed. And I left Vegas and landed back in Vegas. Like, the plane took off and came back. And it was like, oh, we were fucking had, you know, a malfunction or whatever. And I was like, this cannot fucking be happening to me right now. I was in the middle seat, cramped. Like, fuck. It took the plane like an hour to even leave the first time.
And you're tripping.
And I was like, oh, my God. Oh. This is not how this was supposed to go, man. Fuck.
Well, it's the feeling of not being in control is what accentuates the feeling of being high on a plane. Because when you're just strapped in that seat and you're going 500 miles an hour and 30,000 feet in the air, it's just, that alone is weird.
And I was like, how did y'all, why did we have to get in the air for y'all to know that the plane wasn't working right? Kind of want to get off of this particular airplane right now.
Yeah. Yeah. That's scary shit. We haven't had a plane crash in a long time. I probably shouldn't say that, knock on wood. But it's been a while. But that feeling of being completely out of control. And then, you know, you hear about pilots being underpaid, and you're like, oh, fucking pay these guys. Like,
yeah, it's like 300 lives at a time.
Yeah, it's just.
But I knock out on the plane, dude.
Yeah.
I put that seat back just a little bit so I'm not straight up, just a little bit, put my head on the window, and it's over with.
Well, that's one good thing about training all the time is you're always tired.
Yeah, yeah.
You know? You could always take a little nap.
All the time. I live by naps. I can't sleep like more than 4 hours at a time.
Really?
Or whatever, I can't.
Even always? Night, your whole life?
My whole life.
Really?
I'd be walking around the house at like 3 o'clock, 4 o'clock in the morning. Just
no shit. What do you do when that happens? Just fucking them up?
Yeah, just chill. I used to like get up and go run or go work out. But then I found out that overtraining is a real thing.
Mm.
So I was like, dude, even if I can't sleep, it's probably better to just lay here and be still or, you know, watch TV, read a book, do something. Then go out there and train, you know.
Have you overtrained before?
Yes.
Yeah.
I fought Marcus Perez my second fight, and dude, I trained my ass off. I was running, and then I'm warming up in the back, and I'm talking about like 3 minutes into a mid session, dude. I was fucking exhausted. I was like, whew.
Really?
Dude, I'm finna sit down. And my coach is like, oh, you gotta get moving. I was like, I don't want to leave it in here, buddy.
Wow.
But dude, you know, I fought hard for 3 rounds, you know.
You knew that you were not at your full potential.
Yeah. I was like, fuck, dude, if this shit gets hectic, it's gonna get, you go bad like really quick. I think that's like the most helpless thing is like when you're so tired you can't defend yourself, and I did not want that to happen, but
for
luckily
sure.
It went my way.
Yeah, that's the scariest thing for any fighter, to be in that position, especially if you're fighting someone who's got a crazy gas tank.
Yeah,
you know. When it's like when guys level up, when you get to this level of like this Max Holloway level, dudes who have crazy volume and never get tired, and you see guys like in the middle of a fight with Holloway sometimes when they're like, what the fuck is going on? How is this guy not tired?
Yeah.
Like, how does he keep going?
And the fights like that, do you guys see that shit live to like truly appreciate it?
Yes.
Like I was there when he fought Ortega.
Oh yeah.
And I was like, I've watched him fight on TV, and it's like, oh, fuck, dude, he's just picking and popping. But, dude, he's got some fucking thump, you know.
Yeah, he's got some thump. He just doesn't – he's just so smart. The way he fights is so smart. Like, super high volume, a lot of footwork and movement, and his distance intelligence, his knowing when to come in and when to come out,
mm-hmm.
and how he was, like, slipping away from Ortega, and then he's helping him block.
Dude,
remember that shit?
Yeah, I was
like, put your hands up like this, bro.
Fuck, I'm tired, dude. Stop hitting me.
I mean, helping him in the middle of the fight, blocking.
Yeah, he was in the zone for sure.
Well, the Calvin Kattar fight was the one when he was really the most in the zone. When he's in the middle of that fight, he's got his hands down and he's talking to people on the side of the cage. He's like, I'm the best fucking boxer in MMA. And then Calvin's throwing punches at him. And he's just moving his head away, like with his hands down. And he just, and Calvin up until that was like, you know, he still is one of the best featherweight contenders. But up until that, it's like, hey, man, this guy might be a champion someday.
Well, his boxing, he's also got superb boxing.
Yes.
And he got outboxed.
He got pieced up.
Yeah.
He got pieced up. I mean, that was like one of Max's finest performances. But it's like that goes to show you how fucking good Yair Rodriguez is, because that fight was wild.
Yeah.
That fight was wild. I watched that fight again a couple of weeks ago. I was in the gym, and I put it on. I was working out. I stopped working out just to watch that fight. I was like, holy fuck, I forgot how good this fight is.
He's a lot tougher than I thought he was.
Yair was a bad motherfucker.
I was like, fuck, dude.
His kicks are crazy. Like, he had high volume, real power, and fast as shit. And like more like a Taekwondo style than even like Muay Thai style, but it's real dangerous, man.
You know who I like appreciate when I saw them fight live? I was went to I was there when Robbie Lawler fought Nick Diaz.
Oh, yeah.
Just watching him on TV just kind of looks like he's just.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, dude, this motherfucker's got fast-ass hands, and he ain't even fought in, you know, 3 or 4 years. And, like, he was changing up the speed. I was like, dude, this dude's fucking
Nick
way
at his
way
prime
better.
Was amazing. Did you ever see one of the great fights of Strikeforce was Nick versus Paul Daly? Did you ever see that fight?
Yes.
Woo!
Yeah.
Because Paul Daly has one of the most lethal left hands that's ever been thrown in all of MMA. That
sure.
fucking dude nukes everybody. And he hurt Nick a couple of times in that fight. And that was a crazy fight because Nick was the guy that was known as a jiu-jitsu black belt. I mean, yeah, he had knocked out Robbie Lawler, but Paul Daly was one of the scariest strikers to ever fight in MMA. I mean, but still to this day, one of my favorite knockout artists because he just nukes everybody. He hits you with that left hand, you're fucked. And he fights left hand forward, too, which is kind of crazy.
I think he just recently retired, right?
Yep. Yeah, he just had it, and he knocked his last opponent out, which is perfect.
That's how you got to go out. That's
yeah,
like the
like
dream scenario.
It's perfect. It's perfect. So they went to war, and Paul hurt him. Paul hurt him bad. And the way Paul punches, I mean, it's just fucking amazing. Look at that. I mean, almost head kicked him there. When he was down.
Is that illegal back then?
Yeah. It was illegal back then. It's See? Not illegal at 1FC, though. But here's the thing. Paul, while he's doing this, is like unloading the gas tank. Every shot is full clip. So he's essentially sprinting. And that is like one of Nick Diaz's things. He talks shit to you, and he never throws full blast. So he's hitting you with like 60%, 50%. He's touching you. He's touching you.
Yeah,
but he's talking a lot of shit.
He's there at the finish line.
So like even when he's throwing these kicks, he's not throwing them like with everything he's got. But Paul is already tired. Like Paul just sprinted trying to get Nick out of there because he gets everybody out of there. Everybody who stands in front of him, he was blasting. And this fight goes into deep water in this first round. And Nick starts seeing him slow down. So he starts attacking him. And right when you think that Paul's done, you know, Paul is like taking a little break. Paul clips him again and hurts him again in the fight. I mean, it was one of the best performances of Nick Diaz's career. And if you think people that know how good Nick is, a lot of people like they don't know him from these days, from the Strikeforce days.
See, that looks slow on TV, but
it's not slow.
I bet you in real life it's like he's fucking whipping you.
Oh yeah, and he knows like when to throw hard, right? Like half the time he's pity patting you, but when he's got openings, he throws hard.
Yeah,
and so he winds up on the bottom here. But this is like the problem is, you know, Chael Sonnen once said, like, if you don't win by knockout and you try to win by knockout, you're definitely going to lose by decision, and that's kind of like what happened in this fight. Like, look at Paul is. He's so tired.
The leg's done.
Yeah, he's so tired. And Nick knows it, too. So, look, he's throwing kicks at him. Nick is a guy that swam back and forth from out. Look, he clipped him again, though. See? He dropped him again. And, you know, maybe if Paul had dropped him early in the fight like that and he got him in this position, he would have been able to really hurt him. But Nick has swam back from Alcatraz 5 times. Like, his cardio is fucking crazy. He does triathlons.
How far is that?
I don't know. It's like at least a mile in the water.
Yeah.
How far
obviously,
is that?
Like, the current is, like, super strong.
And it's filled with great white sharks.
Yeah.
But the point is, it's like, Nick had phenomenal cardio. That was one of his biggest weapons, as they could keep the heat on you. 2 to 2.5 miles.
How does the distance change?
Fuck. Current?
Yeah, probably current.
Current pushes you.
Gotcha.
So look at the current works. So you're not in a straight shot. You're getting pushed away. Wow. That's pretty wild. That's pretty wild. Look how far you actually have to go.
I think I'm just going to go for a little swim today.
But it's filled with sharks. That's the thing. It's like that's where sharks breed. There's a shitload of sharks up there. They find them all the time with drones. It's really spooky because people don't even know.
They'd be walking around next to
them. They fly a drone over them. And you see like a fucking 15-foot shark just swimming around with people.
Yeah, see, boy, really don't fuck with the ocean like that, man.
I
get my toes wet, you know. I enjoy the waves, enjoy the smell of the salt water. But ankle deep is about as far as I'm going.
I'm with you. I will do a little bit of snorkeling near coral reefs, like if I'm on vacation, as long as I get like 100% confirmation there's no sharks in this area.
There's a lot of stuff in there that
yeah.
they can get me. Take my chances on land, man. It's dangerous enough out here.
The thing about it is, like, you can't move good in there. Yeah. That's what's fucked. You can't get away.
If, you know, whatever it is, if it pulls you under.
Yeah.
Even if you don't, like, bleed to death or lose your leg or whatever, you're going to drown, which is probably one of the worst ways to fucking die. Outside of being burned alive.
It's peaceful ways, because you just kind of black out.
Yeah, I'm a panic a lot before I black out, dude. I'm exert a lot and swallow a lot of water before before I black out.
Yeah, it's not fun, but it's like those fights, like it's interesting to me the different kind of styles, right? Like there's the guys that sprint and they can get guys out of there in the first round, and then there's guys that just like slowly start putting heat on you and cooking you, and then they come after you.
Yeah, and then I don't know. I like the brawlers, but there is something to be appreciated for, like the technicians, like the Adesanyas and the McGregors and stuff like that.
It's a really interesting fight this weekend. Okay, Jared Cannonier, that is about as big as a 185-pound man gets.
Yeah, and I think he's like super deceptively long. Mm-hmm. Like he's short. I think he's only like 5'8", 5'9", or 5'10", something like that. But dude, I bet you he could scratch his kneecap standing up.
I think he's bigger than that. I think Jared is. I think he's 6 feet tall. How tall is Cannonier? 5'9"? Really? Wow. I'm confused. I thought he used to be a heavyweight. That's why I'm thinking it. Because Jared started off his career as a heavyweight.
Yeah.
And then got down to 205, and then now.
But look at his reach. He's 5'9" with a 77.5 reach.
Yeah, that is a long reach. The thing about Jared is, like, he's so fucking shredded and lean and strong. Like, that guy has serious power. Like, serious, serious power.
Don't sleep.
Yeah.
But I think the problem is I don't think anybody controls the distance as good as Adesanya does.
Now, he's the most sophisticated striker the sport's ever seen, in my opinion. He sets shit up. He's reading you. He's probing you. You know when you really see it? The Paulo Costa fight. Because Paulo Costa was just steamrolling everybody. Yeah, just come forward, steamroll, steamroll. And Izzy just picked him apart.
From a distance.
Yeah.
You know, I think the only person who, like, not the only person who gave him trouble, but was Kelvin Gastelum.
Kelvin gave
kinda
him
like
trouble.
Blitzed him a lot.
Well, Kelvin, especially then in that fight, Kelvin has had some good fights and bad fights, but in that fight, Kelvin was at the top of his fucking game.
So but I don't think Cannonier has that same like speed change up that
Kelvin does.
Yeah, Kelvin does. So.
Kelvin has like very smooth and efficient hands. Like when Kelvin throws his hands in combination, he's like the knockout of Bisping.
Yeah.
That straight left. He's so efficient. Everything is so smooth.
He's a lot bigger than you would think. Well, he trains at Fight Ready too, and
so it says he's 6 feet tall.
I don't know. Maybe it was saying 5.9 instead of actually 5'9" on that other thing.
Oh, that makes sense. Maybe. So almost 6 feet tall.
But then it was,
and here it says 6 feet tall. He's definitely not 5'9". That makes more sense.
Right.
Yeah, because I'm like, I think he's bigger than that. Because when he was heavyweight, he was a big guy.
Yeah.
Either way, it's an interesting fight. Like skill wise, like as far as like the sophistication, the striking. Izzy is the man, but Jared is a dangerous guy.
Sure.
He knocks a lot of fucking people out, and he knocked out Blonde Brunson. I mean, Derek Brunson, when he was blonde, was...
Speaking of that,
yeah.
He's 6'1".
Brunson is?
Yeah. So
he looks a couple inches taller than... but who knows who has shoes on?
Yeah, true.
Sometimes, because if Jared is weighing in last, that means Jared might not have put his shoes back on. It's hard to tell. It's hard to tell.
Has him at 5'11".
5'11".
Okay.
Okay, well, whatever. He's whatever he is. Yeah. He's awesome. And he's 37, huh?
I used to picture him as a heavyweight, too.
Interesting. Big. This is his first title shot, too. Yeah, he was way bigger. He's all shredded now. But he's 185 for about an hour. He's another one.
Yeah, I wonder when he walks back into the...
He looks big. He looks big. And it's like he's very durable and very strong. And the knockout of Brunson was a big one. Because Derek, when he's Blonde Brunson
superhero.
He was on a roll, man, know? He beat a lot of tough guys, He's, that's an interesting fight. There's two really interesting fights on the card other than the main event. To me, it's Alex Pereira and Sean Strickland. That's where the rubber hits the road.
Nah, dude, those motherfuckers are going to meet in the middle and
we're gonna find
let
out.
Them ride.
We're going to find out, but...
Zero takedown attempts in that fight.
Guaranteed. Unless Strickland gets hit. If Strickland gets hit and he gets cracked, I guarantee.
He's diving.
Strickland can fight on the ground.
Yeah, he's
got a ground game. He's got a ground game, you know? And Mikulaitis, was it Mikulaitis? How do you say his name? He was able to take Pereira down.
Oh, the Greek guy.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And, you know, Pereira won in the second round with that flying knee, that crazy flying knee. And
that was like his first fight in the UFC, right?
So it's that, like his, yeah, that was his first fight in the UFC. Yeah.
In Madison Square Garden.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know,
yeah.
You know, now he's got his feet wet a little bit. Bruno Silva, he just fought, was desperately tried to take him down.
That guy's a bad motherfucker. Yeah. Bruno Silva can crack.
Sure.
He's a really good striker, and he hit Alex.
Yeah.
He hit Alex with some good shots.
But there was a point where he was like, dude, fuck this stand-up shit. But he couldn't take him down, dude. He's, you know, had him up against the cage out in space, and
yeah.
You know, he did a really good job staying on his feet, so...
Well, what Alex has done that's very interesting to me is he teamed up with Glover. And when he teamed up with Glover, I mean, it's an interesting camp. Like, who's going to Connecticut to fight for world titles, right?
Yeah.
Glover. And Glover's resurgence all coincides with him training with Alex.
Really?
When Alex came and started training with him, that's when Glover really made, like, his last run and got to the title and beat Jan. That's,
why do you think
that's
that
all
is?
Connected. Because I think iron sharpens iron. I think he needed a fucking assassin in camp with him, like a young assassin like Pereira.
But do you think they, like, spar, like, heavy, like, beat the shit out of each other? Spar? Probably not, right?
Probably not.
Probably drill
not.
A little
not
bit more.
Not at 42, probably not. Strickland does, though.
Nah, that motherfucker, like, travels just to spar.
Apparently, that's all he wants to do is just spar all day, hard. He spars hard all day. Spars with everybody.
I believe it.
You know, I mean, that's Bobby Green said it. Bobby Green's, like, trained with him and seen, like, what he does. He's like, that motherfucker goes hard with everybody. He just goes hard.
I've seen Eric Nixick post a picture of him sparring with Ngannou. He's like, dude, he's the only motherfucker in the gym who seeks that guy out.
Jesus Christ.
Yeah, I sparred with that dude one time, and I was like, listen, dude, you're a fucking big motherfucker. I'm not a big motherfucker. So, you know, he's like, ho, you won't die. But I can't get, now getting hurt. That's another thing. I was like,
haha, you won't die.
Yeah, like, but maybe. And dude, meanwhile, he's saying this, he's fucking got someone else's blood all over his rash guard and shit.
Oh,
so
no.
I was like, dude. So when the round started, I tried to grab him. And of course, you know, he sprawled, and I spent the whole time in half guard with him beating my body up. And he's like, oh, you thought that'd be easy, huh? I was like, no, dude, I didn't. I didn't. I thought it was just the lesser of two evils, you know?
Thought
either
that
you
would be easy.
Doing that or you thumping me in my head. So, you know.
Well, Strickland was brought in to help Johnny Elbin, who just beat Gegard Mousasi for the Bellator middleweight championship. So if you did you watch that fight?
I haven't. But I saw the clips that he was fucking putting that work in.
I was very impressed. Very impressed. Because Gegard...
Mousasi's nice, man.
Very nice. He is one of the best middleweights on earth. And Johnny won every fucking round. Every
he was hurting
fucking
him, too.
Round. Hurt him, dropped him early in the first round, had him really badly hurt, took him down, dominated him on the ground. I mean, won every fucking round. And there's a fight where he was like a big underdog coming into that fight. For
those
good reason.
Those are the fights I like to bet on, though.
Yeah.
Like them play. If I see plus 900, I'm throwing something at it. Every rep.
Yeah, well, in that one, a lot of people were, like, really high on Elbin going into that fight, and that's one of the reasons why I was so interested in it. Like, a lot of those ATT guys were very high on him. And this is after, you know, Gegard had destroyed Austin Vanderfold. He fucked him up quick. And so a lot of people, and then Gegard was saying after the fight, like, I am the best middleweight on earth. And he's the guy that I was always like, damn, I wish he hadn't gone over to Bellator because, like, he had beat Chris Weidman, and I was...
How many fights does he have?
Gegard?
That dude's, like, 47 and
something
10
crazy.
Or something. I'm like, God damn, dude.
Bro, he beat Mark Hunt. I'm pretty sure he submitted him, if I remember correctly.
Really?
I think he up-kicked him and caught him with a triangle or something. I'm trying to remember what the fuck happened in that fight. But he can do everything.
Yeah,
Gegard can do everything.
Really well, too.
And you look at him, he looks like the guy who's there to fix your fucking computer. You know?
Yeah, he wears glasses, too, right?
He looks so unassuming.
Yeah.
And even the way he talks, so unassuming.
That's the cool thing about, like, jiu-jitsu and martial arts or whatever. Like, boxers, like, motherfuckers look like
straight armbar. We caught him with an armbar. Oh, it was, you know who he beat? Jacare. He KO'd him with an upkick. That's what it is. and he beat Melvin Manhoef with a triangle. Man, he's beat everybody. Dennis Kang, Jesus Lombard. Christ. He's beat everybody, man. He beat Lombard.
What's his record?
Something preposterous.
It's like 49-8-2 or something.
Jesus
like that.
Christ. Yeah. 49 wins. And Johnny
28
Elvin.
Knockouts.
So Douglas Austin Lima. Vanderfold, John Stalter, Douglas Lima, and Lyoto Machida. And he lost to Lovato. And that was an interesting fight. He was complaining that he thought Lovato was on steroids. But that's just because when you get in, you clinch up with a guy like Lovato, multiple-time world jiu-jitsu champion,
yeah.
Your ego does not want you to believe that the guy's that strong.
Or that good. I grappled with Lovato. How was that? This is like the friendly. Dude, he could kill me if he wanted to. There's like nothing. And he was like effortless.
Yeah.
Right. He was just kind of like floating around. And mm-hmm. who else is like that is Gordon Ryan.
Oh, yeah.
I was like, dude, this motherfucker is like mauling me right now. Dude, I'm trying.
Yeah.
And he's just.
Yeah, his heart rate barely goes up. Yep.
All right. It's time for you to tap now, buddy. It's fucking.
I know.
Give it up.
Isn't it interesting when someone does that, when you roll with somebody and they just kind of baby you and they're still like completely in control? That's the levels of jiu-jitsu that are it's so disconcerting. Because you feel like, oh, I'm at a pretty good level. You know, I can defend. I'll be fine.
So you think. But that's also a cool thing about MMA. There's not a whole lot of, like, there's a lot more humble people. And because you know, like, dude, I get choked out on a daily basis. So I know that I can get fucked up.
Yeah.
You know, like in a locker room, you know, there's like 3 or 4 alpha males. No one ever tries them. So they don't even know.
Right.
Fucking some dude who looks like Gengar Musashi will fuck you up, choke you unconscious, or knock you out. There's nothing you can do about it.
If you saw Austin Vanderford right next to Gegard, you're like, oh, this gorilla with the fucking ears and the tattoos all over his neck, that guy's going to win.
Yeah.
That guy looks like a killer fighter. And Gegard just lit him up on fire.
Yeah.
And even the way he talks, everything like nice and soft. You know,
the cool thing about jiu-jitsu, dude, is like, you can't just look at somebody and be like, brush
them
out. Like, dude, that motherfucker grab your neck, it's over with.
Oh, there's a ton of guys that are like nerd assassins.
Yeah,
They're built like techs.
Like a Ryan Hall.
Yes, perfect example.
Like, dude, I fucking got sperm bigger than you do. Chill out. Chill.
Yeah, but those guys, when
Luminari
you
rolls your
actually
ass.
Roll with them, it's so confusing. It's the beautiful art because with jiu-jitsu, it's the one martial art where the big guy can get dominated by the little guy.
Sure.
Because the reality is, any other world where like a guy size of, say, like Michael Chandler has zero chance against a guy the size of Francis Ngannou. Mm-hmm. Zero. Like zero. Like if they're sparring. Like, if they're just going to throw hands, he has zero chance.
Yeah.
I'm putting all
even
my
get
chips
close.
On the big guy. Yeah. All of them. But in jiu-jitsu, if you get a guy like Charles Oliveira, who's that good at jiu-jitsu, he could strangle a fucking heavyweight.
Yeah, sure.
And I've seen it. I've seen
probably
it happen.
Could.
Oh, yeah. I've seen it. Guy who doesn't know jiu-jitsu gets, and he's rolling just doing jiu-jitsu with a guy like him, and he gets your back. Oliveira's jiu-jitsu is some of the best I've ever seen in MMA. It's like
seamless.
World championship caliber jiu-jitsu, but he's doing it in an MMA match. He's the one guy where it doesn't matter what happens in the fight. If you go to the ground with him, you're in deep shit.
Yeah, yeah.
Like that Dustin Poirier fight.
They're all scared to do it.
Yes.
Like Gaethje had him hurt.
Yes.
He's like, no.
But when you see what happened when he dropped Gaethje and then he got on top of him, he just strangles you.
Choose
just
your
goes
poison.
Straight to it.
I think he's had a resurgence, too, because I remember when he was, like, kind of got on this roll, they were like, oh, dude, nah, I don't think so, because he's a quitter, you know, he's weak. I'm like, all right, dude, fuck that.
Isn't that interesting? How, like, I wonder what it is that changes in a fighter. Is it a mindset thing? Is it, like, I don't know what it is, but something happens where some guys just, they don't quit anymore. They just get to this level. And something changes.
It was so my wife grew up with Oliveira in Guarujá, Brazil.
Oh.
And so she knows him really well, and he just kind of eliminated all the negative people out of his life.
Really?
So I guess probably started taking training more seriously, you know, put more time and effort in the gym and not so much into other people.
I talked to
now
Anakin
he's like knocking
Cormier
people out.
Too. Yeah, knocking people out, strangling people. Is the most submissions ever in the history of the sport. He's the one guy that I really wish Khabib would have fought. Like now, like if Khabib was going to come back, and I wonder. I mean, I'm very interested in Khabib versus Islam Makhachev because that's to me that's the big fight in lightweight.
Khabib or Charles?
Did I say Khabib? I meant Charles. I meant Oliveira. Oliveira versus Islam Makhachev. But if Islam Makhachev loses to Charles Oliveira, then if Khabib had like one more in him.
You don't think there's a price tag they could throw at him?
That's what I'm saying.
Like bro, he's like, break the bank.
Bro, he's as heavy as you right now, though.
That's fine. Hey, baby, money's Khabib's a motivator.
Big. I know, it's a motivator.
You throw a couple of M's at him, he's like, shit, I get down. We can do it at 70. It doesn't even matter.
I don't know if he's motivated by money.
You don't think so?
I don't know. He's an interesting guy. I mean, to be as dominant as Khabib was for as long as he is, and, you know, super religious. Guy drives a Toyota truck, you know, worth
everything
millions
got
of
a
dollars.
Price tag.
I know. Everything
Everything's
does.
Got a price tag.
But I wonder what that price tag is. Like, what is it? Is it 50? Like, what is it? Is it what's the number that has to come out? Before it's like the record skips.
I don't know. Yeah, exactly.
What did you say? Say that again.
All right, cool. How long did you say? When?
$60 million.
Yeah, dude. Anybody on planet Earth.
Yeah. I wonder, you know, because there's paydays that happen, you know, like when Pacquiao fought Floyd, you know, when Conor fought Floyd. Floyd's obviously been involved in most of the big paydays. But there's paydays that happen where you go, ooh.
Yeah. Dude, you know, he gets a lot of shit. People say he's not smart. Like, dude, Floyd? I don't know, like, what his reading level is, but business mind, dude, the dude's fucking smart as shit.
Saying he's not smart because he doesn't have a high reading level, because he doesn't read a lot, is like saying that someone who's, like, really good at something else, like, really good at playing chess, but sucks at jiu-jitsu is dumb because they suck at jiu-jitsu. It's like, how much time has he spent trying to read?
Yeah, exactly.
Almost none, right? But how much time has he spent at boxing? Fucking his whole life. You can't be that good at boxing and not be smart. It's not possible.
Well, even like the business aspect. Yeah. Like he bought himself out of his contract for like $250,000 and then a few years later ends up fighting for $300,000.
Yeah.
So, who's the dummy?
Well, he's smart enough to know how good he is.
Yeah.
Like, he was talking about Triple G, because, you know, Triple G's about to fight Canelo. And he's like, even at 40 years old, he's like, he's easy. He goes, Triple G ain't nothing. He's nothing special. He's easy. And the way he said it, it's like, I don't think he's bragging.
I believe you.
He pieced up Canelo, man. When he fought Canelo, he gave him a boxing lesson. And
what do you think happens now?
I don't know. You know, like, Floyd is 40, and he also hasn't really been fighting. I mean, he's been fighting, but he's fighting guys like Logan Paul.
Exhibitions.
I mean, when he was fighting in Japan, he actually walked around, or in Saudi Arabia, he walked around with the, was it Dubai? Where the fuck did he fight when he fought that exhibition? He walked around with a ring card girl's card. He took her card, and he did walk around with
just fucking
rounds.
Around.
He was having a good time entertaining the crowd. So he's more of like a showman now. He fought that Tenshin Nasukawa. That guy weighs like 125 pounds.
Yeah.
That guy's tiny. Like, that was like a crazy fight.
But.
Made a lot of money.
Time wins.
Yeah.
Look, Father Time wins.
Father Time wins, but the guy doesn't drink. He's always in phenomenal shape. Still stays in condition. Still sparring in the gym. Still working out. Bernard Hopkins had some of his best fights in his 40s.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's because Bernard was super disciplined. Always super disciplined. Bernard was never out of shape. Bernard never ate bullshit. And Bernard fought like with a very defensive-minded, very intelligent strategy, really aware, knew exactly what he was doing at every moment. Never opened up. Bernard Hopkins never like wide swinging punches. Everything was this and here.
Structurally sound.
Perfect. Yeah, very defensively responsible.
I don't know how people do that. Like, whenever I train, I can do it for, like, a short period of time. When I'm not training, dude, I'm getting ready for a fight in particular. Like, yeah, I'll still, like, stay in shape, but not fighting shape. But, dude, I got to have a drink or, you know, eat bullshit. It's like, it's good for the soul, man. These guys must not have souls.
Well, some of the greats agreed with you, like Roberto Duran. Roberto Duran, like one of the greats of all time, unnegotiable. No one will disagree. And Roberto got fat as fuck in the training fights. That's how Sugar Ray got him the second time. He gave him a short amount of time to get ready, and Roberto was really fat. He was like 190 pounds.
I feel like they made a movie about that.
Well, it was a documentary. The Four Kings. That's what it is, right? Isn't that the Showtime documentary? Isn't it called Four Kings? It's about Sugar Ray, Thomas Hearns, Roberto Duran, and Marvin Hagler. It's phenomenal.
I'm going to have to check it
out. If you are a boxing fan, it's phenomenal. Because those guys were just all going back and forth with each other. What's it? Is that what it's called, The Four Kings? I think it's that's what it is. It's a Showtime documentary. Yeah?
Yeah. There's a book called Four Kings? The Kings is all it is.
Oh, it's The Kings? Yeah, yeah, that's what it is? Yeah, okay. Yeah. But it's about those guys. There it is, The Kings. Fucking great. I can't recommend it enough. You want to get excited about working out? Watch that. Because in their primes, man, god damn, there were some fights. When Roberto Duran beat Sugar Ray Leonard in Montreal, holy shit. Holy shit. Marvin was always my favorite when I was a kid because I lived in Boston and he was...
Is he from Boston?
He was, yeah, he's the from Brockton. He was the man. He was the, I mean, that was the guy representing Boston on the, like, the world map of boxing.
Did he always live and train in
Boston? Oh, yeah, he would go to the Cape. It was like a famous story. We tried to find it, but I watched this thing when I was a kid. It was like a news story. And Marvin was training for Mustafa Hampshire. And he was running on the beach, and it was like freezing cold out, and he was running in combat boots. He would run in combat boots, and he was
those
screaming.
Ankle weights?
Well, no, I guess he just wanted to, he was like he was going to war, so he put these boots on. Mm. And he was running on the beach
the mind,
in boots,
right.
And he was screaming war.
Really?
To this day, man, I was like, I don't know, I was like 16 or 17, and I was watching, I was like, fuck.
They filmed him doing it?
Or yeah, he's watched him do it. Running on the beach going, War! And he was the champ. It was Marvin Hagler. And it's just like the discipline that he had. Like that guy was in phenomenal shape. And he would put a pace on people, man. He was an excellent boxer, the best switch hitter in the game at the time. And his like workout routine, like his calisthenics routine was legendary. I mean, that guy was always in tip-top shape. Again, never got fat, never got out of shape. He was phenomenal. In his prime, he was phenomenal. And when he finally beat Tommy Hearns, when he knocked out Tommy Hearns in like one of the greatest fights of all time, that was when he finally got his due. But like his physique, like, I mean, Marvin was fucking shredded. And, you know, there was like... He had a chip on his shoulder, too, because, like, for years and years, he was winning and beating everybody, and he was the champ, but didn't quite get his due.
Yeah.
You know, like, he always felt like they passed him by when they were glorifying Sugar Ray or glorifying Tommy Hearns.
That was the most dangerous motherfucker, somebody fighting for something.
Yeah.
You know, he's like, yeah, I'm going to put some respect on my name.
Yeah, he always had a chip on his shoulder, and I think he needed that chip to get, you know, really ramped up about stuff.
Sure.
You know, but fuck, man. Some of his fights, John the Beast Mugabe, when he knocked out Mugabe. Did you ever see that guy fight?
Uh-uh.
John the Beast Mugabe was terrifying. He was a murderous puncher, and he was knocking everybody out. Jeez. But the thing about Hagler was, one of the things about him was his chin was incredible. They did an analysis. I don't know, it was like I think they did an MRI on him or something. But they found out that the muscles on the sides of his head were three times larger than a normal person. So, like, he had built-in, like, head guard. Like, Hagler had, like, muscles on the side of his fucking head.
You think he developed that, or it's just...
Could be. Could be, like, if you think if you had a mouthpiece in all the time, and you're biting down, like, think of that. There are muscles there.
Yeah, yeah.
You know? When you see someone, like, your jaw muscles, those you definitely can develop jaw muscles. I know there's a lot of people have done workouts where they take like a elastic band and they'll wrap it in like athletic tape and they clamp down on it and then they'll pull and they'll do things with their jaw to develop their jaw muscles.
You think it's like works your neck out too?
It does work your neck out a little, but the best thing for the neck is something that, you know, is just you're just using your neck, like an iron neck. You ever use an iron neck?
Yeah, yeah,
Yeah, that thing's the best thing for the neck.
I think your like the strength of your neck has a lot to do with how you can take a punch. Like, I don't know if it's like maybe your neck, like it absorbs it better, or it keeps it from like whipping too hard when you get
100%,
hit.
100%, that's it. Yeah.
I just think there, you know, there's a correlation between like the strength of your neck and like, how durable you could be.
Definitely, definitely, yeah, no doubt. The thing about the like, there's certain shots where you can get hit where it doesn't matter, like temple shots. Temple shots are weird.
Or like on the tip of your tip of your chin.
Yeah, it's weird. Like the human body is not designed to get hit. You know, it's like there's vulnerable spots.
But dude, it's crazy. I think like humans are like the most durable and fragile thing ever.
Right.
You see, like hear somebody getting hit by a car, and he's like, "Oh shit!" Fucking somebody gets step off a curb and you know tear their ACL or break their leg. I'm like, how the fuck did that happen?
Well, we vary a lot.
Sure.
You know, that was the thing about Hagler. It was like no one could hurt him. Even Tommy Hearns like broke his hand on him in that fight, but Mugabe hit him with an uppercut, snapped Hagler's head back, and Hagler just kept moving forward. You could see Mugabe like, what the fuck? And he eventually stopped him. The only guy that ever knocked him down was Juan Roldan. And Juan Roldan was a bullshit knockdown. He like kind of like cuffed him behind the head.
And pulled him down.
And pulled him down. They called it a knockdown. And Hagler got up and was like, what the fuck? And they called it a knockdown.
It's fucked up.
It's fucked up because like that was his career. Like the guy never got knocked down, and this is one bullshit knockdown. And then he wound up stopping Roldan in that fight.
What do you think about Colby and Usman? You think Colby took Usman down? If they count as 2 points?
Yeah, Colby took him down.
They
if DC says he took him down, he took him down.
Stat sheet says zero takedowns.
Yeah, that's not correct.
Yeah.
I go with Cormier. You go with the Olympic wrestler.
Sure.
The Olympic wrestler says he took him down. Look, Colby's a hell of a fucking wrestler. He's a hell of a fighter. And maybe he would be the champ if it wasn't for Usman, but he's in that Usman era.
Yeah, poor him.
It's funny because Usman tells everybody, like, that's my gatekeeper. You got to beat Colby if you want a shot at the title. And then Colby's like, fuck. Because it's like, you know, he's got a point.
Yeah, sure. Got him twice.
Beat him twice. And, you know, they were good fights, but it was clear who won. First one, he stopped him. The second one, he dropped him, hurt him bad twice. I mean, he's the fucking man.
Yeah.
His hands got
real fucking good, too. He used to just wrestle people, and that's why he probably had that 10-fight win streak before he got a title fight, because no one wants to just watch somebody wrestle, and he started putting hands on people. Oh, shit, okay.
Well, he got the 10-fight win streak before he got a shot at the title because nobody wanted to fight him.
Yeah.
He was mauling everybody. The thing about Usman is, if you watch up until like the Colby fights, nobody's even really giving him a hard time.
Right.
Colby at least gave him some hard rounds, but everybody else gets mauled. I mean, what he did to Tyron Woodley, like to win the title, like shit, we never saw anybody do that to Tyron before that.
Man, it's crazy. You see some of these guys, like they're beating, like the ease in which they're beating the top guys, like, dude, what the fuck?
Yeah.
How is he that much better? And it's not like an attribute thing, right? It's not like, 'cause everybody at the top is big, strong, fast, has all the attributes. There's something else, like probably like mentally that they do for preparation or whatever that, because you have to be consistent, too. Like, there's some guys like, oh, he's really good, but sometimes he don't show up on fight night.
Right.
And these motherfuckers are showing up every night against every opponent. And I think that's the difference between, like, a mid-tier guy and, you know the 1% of the 1% is the guys who show up consistently and can perform in any situation, adverse situation. And some of these guys like Usman, Adesanya, all of their
Khabib.
They do it with ease. And like, what the fuck?
Well, I mean, Adesanya's had tough fights, right? He lost to Jan Błachowicz. That was a tough fight. And, you know, he's had, like, difficult moments inside the octagon, but figured it out.
Mm-hmm.
But Khabib never even had a tough moment.
Yeah, I'm not even sure he's ever been hit for real.
He got hit. Michael Johnson. Johnson cracked him. He hit him with a good punch and rocked him a little, but then he wound up beating the shit out of Johnson and saying, you got to quit. I need the title fight.
Yeah.
I deserve this.
Yeah, that's got to be demoralizing. He's like, fuck, dude. You know, you might have a point.
That was one of those moments where I'm like, please tap. Please tap.
Yeah.
Because I was waiting for that. Like, when Frank Mir fought Nogueira and snapped his arm, like when he had him in that full Kimura, I'm like, Jesus Christ, Johnson, please tap, because it's coming. The same with Makhachev and Dan Hooker. When Makhachev had Dan Hooker like that, I'm like, oh, please tap. Because that Kimura, when you don't tap, that is a nasty break.
Yeah,
man.
That spiral.
Oh.
Yeah, it's like the worst one you can have outside of a compound.
Yeah, when that thing snaps too, it's like now you're fucked for maybe the rest of your life.
Dude, when Frank Mir did that to Nogueira just kind of
looked over,
got up. He was like, I don't know if that's right, but are you not in pain right now, dude? Is that shit not hurt? Because it looks like it hurts.
Well, how about when Muniz did it to Jacare?
Yeah. Ugh.
Yeah, we could hear that one. Like,
was it no crowd? Was it in the Apex?
I don't remember.
I feel like that one would echo.
It was loud. It was loud. Whatever it was loud. Like you could hear the crack. But you could also see the arm
give in.
And he's been in that position. He gets to that position.
He's very
times.
He got me like that. Yeah. I wasn't gonna let him break my shit though.
Here it is. So he rolls and see Jacare's right arm is fucked right now. And then watch how he turns, watch this. That just fucking hurts watching it.
Yeah.
Was he the best jiu-jitsu guy you've ever fought, Muniz?
By far and away, for sure.
What was it like?
Like, he wasn't, like, super strong. He was just, like, a step ahead, you know? Like, he was on my back, fell off my back, and I thought that because he had my leg, too. So I was, like, kind of doing a split. So I thought he was going for that.
That knee bar off
I don't
the back.
Know what it is. Like, Funkmaster hit it on Cody Stamann.
Yeah, that knee bar.
And I was like, nah, I ain't going out like that. But then he like tucked my hand into his in his hip, and then and I didn't even realize, and I knew that it's great because I prepared for that arm bar.
Mm-hmm.
Like I knew that was his thing, but I thought he was going for the leg, and I'd be able to post and get up. And then his face was right there, so I was like, maybe I can get it with my arm. And I was like, shit, it's too late. fuck. And it kind of sucks because you're like thinking about it. It's like, damn, I'm kind of stuck here. My arm's not broke yet, but it's hurting. Should I just let it break?
Ooh.
I think I'll tap and save my arm.
Yeah, fuck that.
In like a millisecond, all those thoughts go through your head as your arm's like, all right, dude, fuck it.
Especially with that guy because you've seen him break arms.
Yeah,
you know. Like Frank Mir, if that guy gets your arm, just tap. I mean, he broke two arms. Who else broke two arms inside the octagon? You know? Frank Mir's probably the leading arm breaker in the history of this
sport. The arm collector?
Yeah. I mean, he broke Nogueira's arm and he broke Tim Sylvia's arm. Two top flight guys, two world champions.
Fuck.
No, who knows what the fuck Frank Mir would have happened to him if he didn't get hit by that car? You know, he was on a motorcycle. Some asshole ran a red light, slammed into him, sent him flying, and heavy fracture of his.
They had
his
a video
feet.
Of that, right?
I don't know if they
like a CCTV kind of.
Maybe. I don't know. I never saw it, but I know that it took him forever before he came back. Before he was 100% again, it took forever.
Yeah, especially on a weight bearing bone.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it takes a little bit longer.
Well, look at Connor.
He's a big guy.
It's been a year plus for Connor. Like, how long has it been since he broke his leg with Dustin? I want to say it was July of last year.
I'm not sure.
Somewhere around there. And, like, he's just started kicking the bag. Just started doing it now. Like, what I had heard was that just a few months ago, he couldn't pivot off of it. It's like he couldn't torque. Like,
really?
He wanted to throw a left hook and pivot off his left leg. He couldn't do it. But it looks like he's getting better now. I mean, he's throwing kicks with it.
You have to think that, like, when he goes into his next fight, how much is he going to kick? That certainly has got to be in, like, the back of your mind. It's like,
right.
I broke that shit one time.
But also, now he's got a titanium plate in it. Like, if you could just get plates all over your shit.
Fucking a Wolverine.
Right. Like, imagine if someone, like, you know how dudes in baseball, they get that Tommy John surgery?
Uh-huh.
There's guys who get surgeries that don't need it. Because they want to be able to throw better.
Yeah, because it's like the rehab and they tighten up that tendon or ligament or whatever.
I talked to my friend, the late, great Brody Stevens, and he was saying that it's very rare that guys have done that, but he does believe that people have done it. They've gotten elective surgery just so they could throw harder. And I'm like, that's pretty crazy. But if you could get your forearms done, your upper arms done, your thigh done.
I just want my skull done. Fucking just tink, tink, tink.
I wonder if that's possible. I wonder if you could like get your chin done. Make it harder.
Broke my hand and they had put a plate in there, and I don't think it. I don't think it makes it harder.
No,
dude, that was agony, dude. I broke it in a fight. I broke it fighting Theodoro, and dude, it didn't really hurt. Like I could tell that I broke. Like my hand just felt a little looser.
You know? Yeah.
And you know, I could do this and see this little bone or whatever go up and down. But after the fight, took a shower, sat in the stands, watched the rest of the card, carried my son out of there. And but after surgery, dude, I was like, this is agony, dude. And it looks like an erector set. Dude. There's like a plate there and like screws that I'm sure they fucking used a power drill to fucking drill that shit in there. And I was like, I see the X-ray, and I was like, dude, that's why this shit hurts. Dude. Fuck
it. So does it hurt still?
No, not at all.
How long did it take before it felt okay again?
I think like 6 weeks. I think I fought him in December, and then I fought again in maybe June.
But you're...
No, April, because I fought Roundtree after him.
And you obviously don't have any problem throwing it, because you...
No.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You're not hesitant.
I've had that Tommy John surgery, too.
Oh, you did? You had that done?
Yeah. And when I fought, like, I had a pinched nerve in the elbow. And, dude, like, these two fingers, I couldn't feel them. It was just like ants running down my arm the whole time. I'd wake up in the middle of the night, like, I fought Machida. Like, I didn't have any, it's like all the range of motion I had.
Really?
In my elbow.
That's it? Just like a foot?
Yeah. And, I really couldn't even, do anything with it. And then I fought Machida with essentially one arm. And I was like, dude, maybe it's not the guy to fight with fucking one arm. But yeah, dude, after surgery, dude, they're taking bone chips out of there, bone spurs. Now I got everything back.
Wow. How many different surgeries have you had? Just those two?
Nah, I've had quite a few.
How many?
My hand, my elbow. I tore my Achilles.
Oh, shit. That's a big one.
Yeah, that was weird because I went my entire football career and never even pulled a hamstring.
Really?
Never. Never even pulled a hamstring. And I think the worst injury I had was like a fucking corneal abrasion. And I was playing flag football like maybe 2 years later for a charity thing. And I was running and dude, you hear it pop. It didn't really hurt and I kind of fell and I thought somebody had like kicked my foot. So I got up and I was like, dude, that's fucked up. Whoever just, tripped me. And I realized nobody's around me. So I was like, dang, I just tripped over my own feet. Fuck. And I tried to take a step and my heel didn't come off the ground. So I was like, that's not right. So I started looking at everybody's face. I thought I had dislocated it at that point. I was like, but if my foot's facing any other direction, then it should be. People are going to freak out. I looked down, I said, okay, cool, my toes are facing forward. And I took another step, and same thing, the heel didn't come off the ground. I was like, dude, I just tore my Achilles.
Shit. How long did that rehab? That's a big one, isn't it?
Yeah, that shit took a while. But I think I tore it in, like, July, and then I fought in December. No, that following February. So I think, like, I fought in, like, 9 months.
When did it feel like you could start working out again?
I kind of push the envelope when it comes to that thing. So, like, they were like, you have to wear a boot with, like, this pad in it, and then eventually, like, you take a little bit of the pad out so your foot lays flat in the boot. But I never even wore the thing, just the boot. And then, because, dude, I was on crutches. It was summertime. It was hot as fuck. Every time you just hear that shit click, click. Click. I'm getting off of these as soon as possible. And so I started walking around in the boot. And I started running, jogging. I was like, I think
so
it's good.
When you get injured with something like that, like was this before you were fighting?
I was fighting.
This was, but it
may
was
have
this
been an amateur.
It wasn't the UFC.
No.
So when you were doing that, did you have access to good rehabilitation facilities?
Some of the best in the world are right there in Birmingham.
Oh, okay.
All like the WWE guys, all the pro guys, like ball sports, baseball, football, come to Dr. Andrews in Birmingham.
Oh, that's because there's so much sports going on down there.
Yeah.
What have you ever used the UFC?
He's the guy who invented Tommy John surgery.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, no shit.
So everybody, like a lot of baseball players, come to Birmingham to do surgery, get surgery. And the guy who runs it now, Dr. Kane, he was actually the Alabama team doctor when I was there. So he's done all my stuff.
Oh, wow.
Except for my eye. I had to go somewhere else.
Is that the corneal abrasion?
No, I have a wrinkle in my retina.
A wrinkle?
Yeah, that's the first time I heard that shit. Like straight lines would be like wavy. My depth perception was getting fucked up. And I was like, dude, I think I'm going blind in my right eye.
Oh, shit.
And they're like, no. I mean, eventually you're going to have cataracts, but you're not there yet. Yeah.
Is this a genetic predisposition or is this from
getting socked in the face?
Yeah.
You know? Trauma, I guess, is what they said. And yeah, so they had to go in there, and he's like, I essentially spot welded your retina and, you know, cleaned it up or whatever. And I was like, that's my eye.
Oh. Yeah, that's when you appreciate a guy like Michael Bisping, right?
Yeah, yeah.
That guy is a wild motherfucker.
Dude, when I heard that, I was like, dude, this is my new favorite fighter, dude. You can't
say
shit.
10 fights. With one eye. And won the world title.
Yeah, yeah.
And then defended the world title with one eye.
Yeah, so I was like, what's your excuse? Look at that motherfucker.
I always say that I would never suggest that anybody did that. Never.
Of course not.
Never. But I'm glad he did it.
Yeah.
Just because it's a story. Just because he did it and he got away with it and he won the world title and no one's ever going to take that away from him.
Yeah. But, you know, you kind of need both eyes. You need to see shit coming from,
yeah,
coming from over here, you know?
Well, that's why he explained the Anderson Silva flying knee knockout. You know, when Anderson, when he was, like, looking for his mouthpiece, he dropped his mouthpiece, and he was trying to point to the referee to tell him that his mouthpiece was out, and Anderson hit him with a flying knee.
Yeah.
Because he can't see out of his eye. So he's, like, pointing to this, and Anderson cracks him and drops him.
I fuck that mouthpiece, dude. I got that guy in front of me.
And then he wins the next round. I mean, Michael Bisping, that man is the epitome of mental toughness.
Yeah, sure.
Epitome. That there's no more mentally challenging thing than you're competing in a sport that's already blinded one of your eyes, and you're competing at the highest level, and you win the world title.
And he probably wasn't hurting for money, so it probably wasn't like he had to.
Right.
Excuse me. Had to do that.
He's a fucking savage.
Yeah.
He's a fucking savage. I mean, god damn, that's one of the most impressive things I've ever heard in my life. And
I didn't believe it at first. I was like, surely not. And he's like, oh, yeah, look. And then popped that. I was like, oh,
takes
fuck.
Takes that thing out and you see what's going on behind there. They still to this day can't fix it. He said he can tell the difference between the lights being on and off. That's it. That's it. Yeah.
Fuck.
So they said you have a wrinkle, so they spot welded it. But why do they think you're going to get cataracts?
I really didn't pay attention to that part. But he just said, yeah, eventually you're going to have cataracts.
And that, would they be able to do something about the cataracts?
I don't know. You know, I think like medical technology is advancing so fast.
Yeah.
Like when I was younger, like an ACL injury, that your career is done.
Right.
But now you got guys like Adrian Peterson. I don't know if you know who that is, but dude, that motherfucker came back and set the Russian title in 9 months after tearing his ACL.
Yeah, it's crazy.
So I'm not really worried about like. Outside of, like, brain stuff, like, physical stuff, I'm not really worried about, because by the time I get there, they're going to have an answer.
I think so, too. I think you're at a good point right now where there's so much medical technology that's coming down the pipe, too. They just keep finding new and better ways to fix things, new, better ways to surgically repair things. It's an interesting time. The only thing they can't right now, like, they're still fucked when it comes to knees, like, when it comes to, like, meniscus and cartilage. Like,
yeah.
Meniscus and cartilage. Like, here's another thing. Kamaru Usman, his knees are fucked.
Yeah, are they?
When he was on the podcast, he told me he can't walk on sidewalk sometimes. He has to walk on the grass because it hurts too much to walk on the sidewalk.
Yeah, imagine if that motherfucker was 100%.
Imagine.
Man, fuck.
He can't run. He doesn't do any cardio like that. He does all his cardio. He does like high intensity stuff, and he does wrestle because you have to. But he's like, he said he's accepted the fact that when this is all done, he's going to have to get his knees replaced. That is wild.
Yeah.
And if you look at it, like, his legs are not big. He does not have big legs. His upper body's fucking jacked, right? But his legs, you know, not impressive.
You think that has something to do with it?
I think because his legs are fucked, because his knees are fucked. He can only do so much with his legs.
What does the muscle have to do with the cartilage, you think?
Well, I think he can't use his legs the same way you would use them, you know, if his knees were fine. You know what I mean? Like, if his knees were fine, he's doing squats and deep lunges and sprints up hills and shit like that. I don't think he could do that. I think he has to get all of his cardio and different things.
Maybe it's a blessing. Maybe if he had big legs, he'd have to fight it.
85? Yeah, right? Yeah, maybe. Yeah. That's a good point.
Yeah.
But, I mean, who knows? I mean, I don't know how much he cuts weight, but I imagine he cuts quite a bit because he seems very
large.
He's got to
be over 200 pounds.
He's got to be over 200 pounds. But that brings you to guys like Sean Strickland, who fought at 170 and was like really struggling. Now at 85, he's just lighting it up.
You know, he probably wasn't like cutting weight. He's probably doing that 6 hours in the sauna thing to not dieting.
Maybe.
So I think like when you do that, your brain gets dehydrated as well. So that like, there's like a little like membrane or fluid barrier between your skull and your brain to keep your, you know, cushion your brain. I think when you wear that down, your brain is crashing into your skull. That's how guys, you know, get dazed and wobbled and, you know, kind of lose their durability.
Yeah, I don't know about the technical aspects of that, but I do know for a fact that when guys dehydrate themselves heavily, they lose their ability to take a shot for some reason. It's just, I mean, it just makes sense. Like, you're weakened.
Yeah,
you know?
Sure.
Especially if you do it incorrectly and you don't rehydrate correctly. And then that was a big complaint that a lot of guys had, like, when they took away the IVs. You know, a lot of guys are like, hey, you know, we're going to see a lot more guys get hurt because they just can't rehydrate the same way.
Yeah. Somebody was telling me that they were using the IVs to, like, flush, like, EPO and stuff.
Yep.
So I was like, well, I mean, so you guys just ruined it for everybody else.
Well, they can mask steroid use. They can mask some steroid use, apparently. That's what Nowitzki was saying. They can mask some steroid use with IVs. I'm not exactly sure how that works, but I think it's just some stuff shows up in your urine, and if you could just get a bunch of fluids into your system, like
diluted.
So much so that, yeah, that it flushes it all out, that you can't find the trace of what it is. Dude, the early days, everybody was on something. You know, when I first started working for the UFC, it was 97. I started working for the UFC at UFC 12, and everybody was on something.
Dude, as soon as I get out of that testing pool, man, I'm going to the doctor. Give me the cocktail, dude. I want to be 22 again. I want to be fucking Hercules with half the work.
Do you do anything to try to elevate your testosterone now? Are you doing – is there any like
– man,
you're 35. You're 35, right?
I started taking that it's like a Nigerian root. What is it?
Tongat Ali.
That's it.
Yeah.
Dude. I'm out here shooting ropes now. Shooting ropes. I like, you know, I've taken like maca root and yohimbine bean. I was like, dude, this is bullshit. It's not doing anything. But that stuff.
Yeah.
You know.
Did you get your testosterone checked before and after?
I got checked before. I haven't got the results back. I just started this like 2 weeks ago.
That big a difference that quick, huh?
So, you know.
Let's fucking go.
Yeah. Like a Rottweiler. So I'm just, you know, waiting to, you know, and then, you know, maybe after like a month or two, I'll go back and get my testosterone checked again and see what it is.
Interesting. And that stuff's legal.
Yeah. I think you can take like roots and like tree barks and stuff like that.
How weird. Do you know that that's how they make testosterone? They make it off of a Mexican wild yam.
Really?
Yeah, these are yam.
What yam is this?
I don't know.
Find out. I'm going to go
buy some. Yeah. I don't think you could eat it and get testosterone. I don't understand how they do it.
We're about to find out. Put that shit in the oven.
There's something. I don't understand how they do it. I really don't. I've never even looked into it. But I do know that from they do this carbon. I think it's carbon isotope testing. They can find out whether or not the testosterone that's in your body has come from exogenous sources, like wild yams. But one of the things Nowitzki was saying was that they don't – because these guys like USADA guys, they always have to think like multiple steps ahead. Because people are like – when Barry Bonds and, you know, Victor Conte had that clear shit.
The criminal is always a step ahead.
Yeah. So he's thinking what Nowitzki said is, like, theoretically at least, they should be able to extract testosterone from animals. And if they extracted testosterone from animals and injected it into people, you might not be able to detect whether or not that came from an animal or whether or not it came from the human being themselves. So it might look like natural levels of testosterone.
So you can get testosterone from a fucking silverback.
Yeah.
Take it.
Yeah.
The fucking five times the size I was yesterday.
I would go with a chimp because they have the bigger nuts.
Yeah?
Yeah, but you know why? It's interesting. Because female chimps are promiscuous. So when female chimps are promiscuous, the male chimps grow bigger nuts and bigger dicks.
Yeah.
That's why male humans have big dicks, because female humans are, like, if you look at gorillas, gorillas have tiny dicks.
Like the smallest in the
per size,
you know.
The female gorillas are chilled. They're not interested in fucking around. But female chimps, they fuck around like crazy.
Yeah.
And so male chimps have giant nuts.
I seen a little, you know, Animal Planet or whatever, fucking, you know, there's like a alpha monkey or whatever, mm-hmm. and he's the only one who's supposed to fuck.
Exactly.
But as soon as he goes off in the trees, fucking homeboy company, start running
just
the train
like
on
him. Just like in real
life. Yeah, exactly.
Okay, here, steroid chemists often refer to the 1930s as a decade of sex hormones, when molecular structures of certain sex hormones were determined and first introduced to medical practice as drugs. Russell Marker achieved the first practical synthesis of the pregnancy hormone, progesterone, by what now is known as the Marker degradation, produced from starting material in a species of Mexican yam. Marker's progesterone eventually became the preferred precursor in the industrial preparation of the anti-inflammatory drug cortisone. Important research on sex hormones continues in Mexico, leading to the synthesis of the first useful oral contraceptive in 1951. Ah, interesting.
So I can take a pill and kill my sperm?
I guess. Mm. So this does have something to do with testosterone, doesn't
it? Yeah, there's a chemical compound in it called dioskinin? I don't know.
Dioskinin.
And I believe they synthesize that into making...
Wow, that's all from this one fucking yam. Isn't that crazy? Like, how'd they even find that? If you think about all the plants that they don't know about that are in the Amazon, like, pretty wild. So wild yam is also often promoted as a natural alternative to estrogen therapy. So you see it used for estrogen replacement therapy, vaginal dryness, in older women, PMS, menstrual cramps, weak bones, osteoporosis, increasing energy and sexual drive in men and women. Fucking yams, baby.
Shit.
Wild yams.
Sweet potatoes for breakfast every day.
Yeah, there you go. It's crazy.
It's crazy, like, how people know how, like, ayahuasca. Mm-hmm. Like, how'd they know?
How did they know?
Like, watch an animal eat, like, the tree bark and start tripping, be like, what's going on? Or watch, you know, something eat mushrooms, be like,
there's two prevailing theories, right? The prevailing theory number one that's told by the shaman is that the plants told them what to add up. Like, in that when they say the plants, they're not sure if they're saying mushrooms, because, you know, psilocybin mushroom use is also, like, there's apparently not a great history of psilocybin use in the Amazon. But when Terrence McKenna went down there with his brother, they found psilocybin mushrooms everywhere, and they took so much of them that his brother was fucked for like 2 weeks. It was so, and these guys are like legitimate scientists.
Yeah, yeah.
And his brother took so much that he basically evaporated for like 2 weeks. And it took 2 weeks for him to come back to the point where he could
rebalance.
Well, I think he's just tripped so hard. You know, like a crazy dose is like 5 grams of mushrooms. That's a crazy dose.
How much have you took at one time?
I think I've gotten pretty close to that.
I've taken 7 at once.
Ooh, what was that like?
Man, it wasn't what I expected.
Really?
I thought it was going to be like the toad. Mm. But I had never like heard or anything about the toad. Everybody's like, oh, you fucking take a heroic dose.
Yeah.
Is what they were telling me it was called. I was like, oh, fucking dude, I'll do 7.
Did you do it outside? Were you like hanging out?
Dude, I kind of, got away from the family, checked myself into a hotel.
Oh.
And, turn off the lights, close the curtain, and down the hatch.
That's but, the right way.
It's but totally dude, I went to the wrong fucking hotel. I just hear motherfuckers arguing and arguing with their fucking girl and shit. And I was like, dude, this fucking sucks, dude. I'm just like giggling and laughing, just like, you know, a normal mushroom trip. And I was like, all right, dude. So fucking by midnight, I was back at the house fucking watching cartoons and shit.
The problem also is that like some psilocybin mushrooms are way stronger than other ones. And you could get a, you know, you're buying them from a guy. You know, who knows if he's doing it right and, you know, cultivating them right.
I bought some from a guy. He's like, yeah, these are great. They're hydroponic. You know, the guy plays symphony for them. He sings to them. I was like, I don't really give a fuck about that. Just tell me my mushrooms, dude.
Well, the way I always describe DMT is it's mushrooms times a million plus aliens.
Yeah.
That's
like, you know, I'm sure you know, but like the two different kinds.
And dimethyltryptamine, yeah.
So that's like the aliens for me. Yeah. It's like floating around in geometric shapes and bright colors and shit.
Is that the one you did, or did you do 5-methoxy?
I did the MEO.
Yeah, I've done that too. The 5-MEO is pretty wild because that one you cease to exist.
Yeah.
The thing about NN dimethyltryptamine is when you're taking it, you're still there.
Yeah.
You're still you. Like it's still Eric, but it's Eric in another universe.
So I've done that twice, and I think the second time I think it was the NN. Because like I was still like rolling around on the ground and slobbering and stuff, but I was still like present.
Did you see visuals though?
In my body, yeah. So I was like, I like hit it, laid back, and there was a ceiling fan, and dude, I just watched the ceiling fan like woo, 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 and then it stopped, and then it started doing all the
crazy geometric patterns.
Yeah,
and
I was like, oh fuck, here we go, dude. But I never left my body, like my soul or. You know, whatever it is. The first time I did it, everything just went white. I was panicking. I was like, oh, fuck, oh, fuck, oh, fuck. And now I was like, oh, well, you're dead, buddy. Like,
you
give it
up.
Yeah, just, you know, just relax and, you know, see where you go from here.
I wonder if that's what it feels like when you actually do go. I wonder just like, shh.
Maybe. I'm sure like a Matt Brown or somebody would be somebody to ask.
Right. The guy who died.
What happened when you died?
Those guys are scary. There's something about those guys that have like overdosed and died. They come back, like Court McGee, Matt Brown.
I have a theory like all those guys who were like junkies and beat addiction, they have unlimited cardio. They don't ever get tired.
Well, Court.
Matt Brown's a little older now, so, you know, of course, but Court McGee doesn't get tired. Jared Gordon doesn't really get tired. Mm. You know, so.
You ever seen Court's cardio routine though?
Yeah,
it's fucking insane. He does everything with like a 45 pound vest. He runs miles with a 45 pound vest on. Like, he does a lot of wild cardio shit.
I met him when I was training at Factory X one time, and he started telling me all these stories about him being like addicted, and I was like, you?
Yeah.
I would think that you were like fucking Amish or, you know,
right,
you know, fucking no technology, fucking out in the woods type, you know. I'm like, fuck, dude.
Well, he went the other way. You know, like, he went from being a guy who's a drug addict, ruined his life, to being, like, super disciplined.
Yeah, yeah.
You know?
And he's a big advocate, too.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So.
Yeah.
That's cool.
Yeah, it's interesting guys that, like, develop a base of cardio and then push it and keep pushing it and keep pushing it. Like, you can take your cardio to some crazy fucking places. And some dudes, their cardio is, like, one of their primary weapons. It's like they just can put a pace on people. Like Max Holloway is a good example of that. He puts a pace on people, and they have a really – but so is Volkanovski. So that fight this weekend, woo!
Yeah, I know.
That one, like those first two fights were so fucking close. They were so close.
Hey, I'm going. I can't wait. Whenever I leave out of here, I'm going to go.
Yeah, I'm very excited.
Out to Vegas.
Very, very excited for that. I don't know what the fuck's going to happen in that fight. So there's those two fights. There's Cannonier versus Izzy. There's Max Holloway versus Volkanovski. Let me see the whole card. Let me see the whole card. And then there's Sean Strickland versus Pereira. First of all, how crazy is Sean Strickland to take that fight? Because Pereira's not even ranked. And Sean Strickland's number 4.
Yeah,
That's a big risk. That's a big fight right there. Oh, that's right. Pedro Munoz versus Sean O'Malley. So Young Punisher versus Sugar Sean. That's an interesting fight, too. That's a very interesting fight. So is that the main card on pay-per-view?
Yeah, and they just announced that the Miesha Tate fight has been moved to the next
What happened?
I just looked. I didn't see any announcement on what happened, but they just moved it to the next pay-per-view or the Long Island card.
Interesting.
At the end of the month.
Yeah, I think Sean O'Malley is going to be hard to beat.
Yeah. Oh, Brad Riddell versus Jalen Turner. That's an interesting fight, too, because Jalen at lightweight is so big. He's
6'3".
So long. And Robbie Lawler versus Brian Barberina. That's a great fight. Ian Garry versus Gabriel Green. Ian Gary's a bad motherfucker. That's an interesting guy. And so they're doing Jim Miller versus Donald Cerrone because of the Joe Lozon fight fell out again. Interesting. Uriah Hall and Andre Muniz. Oh, shit. Interesting that they keep having Muniz, like, almost undercover. You know, they don't have him in high-profile bouts.
I think that's like, he's fighting Uriah Hall. It's pretty.
Yeah, but it's the early prelims. That's the Fight Pass prelims.
Yeah, I think these are on ABC. Yeah, these are on.
Oh, interesting. And so, that's right. So they're putting that on ABC. They're going to have a whole card on ABC soon. And then so let me see the early prelims.
Oh, so that's
again.
The early.
Yeah. So Jessica I and Macy Barber, that's a good fight. Brad Tavares. Duplessis, that's a good fight. Okay, interesting. Wait a minute. So Jessica Rose Clark. Click on that. Isn't that, who the fuck did she just fight? Let me see who she fought. Okay, yeah. So it's a good card, like, top to bottom. That's a good card top to bottom.
Yeah, that's a phenomenal card.
Yeah. Damn. Yeah, there's no duds on that card. That whole card is pretty fucking banging. That Brad Riddell, Jalen Turner, boy, I didn't even know that fight was happening. That is a fucking fantastic fight. Because Jalen is about as 6'3". 155. What the fuck, man?
And the way he's built, too.
Yeah, and knockout power, too. Like, real long.
Super good boxing, too.
Yeah, real clean. And Michael Bisping, when he was preparing for Luke Rockhold, was sparring with him because he was, like, literally the size of Luke Rockhold, which is crazy.
Jesus.
Yeah, at 155. So it's like, do you think there should be more weight classes?
Yeah, but this is the thing. Like, if you have, like, a 85 and a 95, man, it's just going to be the 205ers cutting to 80 to 95, you know?
Right, but maybe the people that can barely get to 205 won't do that. Because there's a lot, like, John Jones not fighting at 95.
No.
He's not losing another 10 pounds. Like, he's so big for 205. Like, the really big guys at 205, they're not going to do that.
But I think, like, boxing, for example, has so many weight classes because it's the wrestlers that kind of, like, inspired the weight-cutting thing,
mm-hmm.
like these drastic weight cuts.
Yeah.
So, I think that's why there's fewer weight classes in MMA because boxers, man, motherfuckers not cutting 30, 40 pounds.
No one's doing that in boxing.
There's,
no
like, a weight class every 7 pounds or 5 pounds or whatever it is.
I mean, look at that's one of the crazy things about Canelo, is that Canelo's willing to go all the way up to light heavyweight. You know, when he fought Floyd, I think they fought at 152.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and here he is fighting Bivol at 75, which is crazy.
Yeah. You know, like for me, I always feel more comfortable fighting at 85 because I know I put in like more work and preparation. Like, even in like when you have to watch what you're eating, when you eat it. You know, it's like it takes a lot of discipline. At 205, if I leave the gym, shit, I feel like go grabbing a burger. I can go grab a burger, you know?
Mm.
So I can't do that when I fight at 85. So when I fight at 85, I know that I've crossed all the I's or crossed all the T's and dotted all the I's and did everything. I fight at 205, I'm like, well, let's see how it goes, guys.
Dominic Cruz says the same thing. He says there's something about the discipline required to make bantamweight that makes him a better fighter.
It's true. Well, for me, anyway.
So you feel that even so, it's not just that at 85 you're really big for the weight class, but it's also just the fact that you mentally you know that you've put in that work to get down.
Yeah, I know my cardio is going to be on point. I know, like I've done everything that I can, including like the diet, and you know, it's just something about knowing that you've done everything, everything, yeah. everything, everything, that you didn't leave anything out. Like, I can still do and train and do all the same things, but I just don't feel as, like, maybe it's just a mental thing. I don't feel as, like, prepared fighting at 205 because I know I've had those cheeseburgers.
Right.
I know I've had that,
right,
you know, ribeye or whatever.
Yeah. If you, like, if there was no weight cutting as far as dehydration, what do you think is, like, the lowest comfortable weight that you could get down to? Where you'd be shredded but be able to fight?
Like 200?
200.
Like, I'm a fat kid, you know? So if I just, like, ate well, I wouldn't be 230.
Right.
You know,
if
but
you ate well.
I want to enjoy my life.
But if you're lean and healthy, it would be 200.
Yeah. I mean, I would probably have to work a little bit to get to 200, but I wouldn't. It wouldn't be that hard.
Do you think it's possible to ever get to a point where there is no weight cutting? Like, do you think that that would ever happen?
I don't know. One does it, right? Nobody cuts weight.
They do something. I've heard there's ways around what one does, too. I heard there's a little bit of shenanigans going on.
There's always going to be a way. The criminal's always a step ahead.
Right.
have you ever seen Catch Me If You Can? Leonardo DiCaprio, where he's
a long time ago, yeah.
Yeah, so like all the, like the fraudulent checks and stuff, mm-hmm. they learned from him. Like he, you know, he eventually gets caught,
yeah,
and he started working for the FBI to
catch
like, look, dude, this y'all are fucking up. Dude. This is how simple this shit is.
Yeah, like, oh, well, that's what Victor Conte did. Victor Conte, after he got busted and went away, he came back and he was like, "Let me show you how I did it." And then he became the guy that calling out everybody else for having bad drug testing, which is kind of ironic.
Yeah.
You know?
You're the pot or the tea kettle, buddy.
I'm fascinated by ONE. ONE FC is fascinating to me because they do Muay Thai fights. They have grappling matches. And when it comes to just straight MMA, they allow a lot of shit, like knees on the ground, knees to the head on the ground.
I think that should be allowed. Because if I'm in a dominant position, why do I lose offense? Why do I lose weapons? Because you can't get off the ground or you're in a turtle position.
Right.
Or, you know, you get up carelessly. Why right. Why am I penalized for
right.
For
it that? Changes the way people fight, right? Because if you knew, if you're in a turtle and you know that a guy can just drop knees in your head, you're not going to lay there. You're
sure.
going to move. You're gonna defend yourself. You're going to
get
out of there.
Get knocked the fuck out.
I've seen some horrific knock. Go to ONE FC's Instagram page.
They have the best. Oh my god, dude! I fucking scroll through that thing forever.
Some of their KOs are ruthless, man. Like, and there's this one dude who was landing these knees on the ground to the head in side control, and you realize that from side control, the game. Scroll down a little bit. I'll show you where it is. It shows the whole game is completely different. You see a guy on the ground in side control.
Yeah, you better get your ass up.
Let's see if we can find it there.
Dude, I've won a fight and actually got a bonus off a soccer kick in somebody and got disqualified for kneeing somebody on the side of the head.
This is interesting. I don't see it.
They changed the rules, too. It used to be one hand. If one hand was down, they were still up. And then they changed it. If anything other than their feet is on the ground, they're
where
down.
Where were you allowed to soccer kick somebody?
I fought Tim Williams in Lincoln, Nebraska. It was a UFC fight.
Really? You soccer kicked him to the body or to the head?
To the head. He like...
Oh, that's it right there. See that dude? Yeah, that right there. Watch this. This is crazy. Boom! Boom!
You got to play that with sound.
Yeah, give me some sound.
Ooh.
Yeah. You hear that?
What, dude? Don't get comfortable down there, dude.
That's a perfect example, because in that position in the UFC, that's like not as dangerous a position. You can kind of hold on. But if a guy can do that, I mean, that's martial arts. That's if you can drop an elbow on someone's head, why can't you do that? I feel like you should be able to do that, especially in this position particularly, because you're not even trapped against the cage, right? Like that guy's there in that spot. Like, you got to fucking move. You can't lay there like that.
Yeah.
That's nasty.
So when I fought Tim Williams, he like threw a head kick and I blocked it and he fell. There's like 20 seconds left in the fight, so he was like trying to get up quick, the technical get up. Yeah, I just stepped in and put him down.
Oh, I remember that fight.
I have his teeth marks still in my shin.
Oh, shit.
And dude, he had like a boil and bite mouthpiece, like not even like one that.
Oh, really?
I was like, dude, I don't know if that's if you want to use that ever again.
Yeah,
dude.
Fuck that. You need to get a fitted one.
Yeah.
What kind of cup do you use? Do you use like a
diamond cup?
Yeah, those are the Diamond MMA Cups, the shit.
Yeah.
Compression torts.
And dude, I see like every single nut
shot.
There
it is right there. Boom. The perfect timing.
Every single nut shot, everybody like drops on the ground. I was like, dude.
Yeah, if you have one of those Diamond Cups, you don't feel shit. Look at that. Perfect timing.
I think I get hit in the nuts almost every fight.
As he's getting up, boom. I mean, you couldn't have timed that better. Right when the hand lifts up is when you land the shot.
But under those rules, even if his hand is down,
mm-hmm.
he was still right. considered up at the time.
Right. One down, right? Yeah. Two down is a down fighter. It's like weird.
Yeah.
But that's why I like what ONE FC is doing better. You know, I was talking to Tim Kennedy about this the other day because he won fights where you're allowed to knee on the ground because, you know, he's a strong guy. You get a guy in a position where you get like a front headlock and you could just drop elbows on him or drop knees on him, rather. And in the UFC, you can't.
Yeah.
It's kind of weird because it's a good, effective weapon.
And it's a good position for the guy on top. So why do I get penalized?
Right. The soccer kick on the ground is just, that's so ruthless.
I think it just doesn't look appealing for on TV. Like, you know, you want soccer moms and kids to watch, so maybe a dude getting drilled in his shit is...
At this point, I think we have enough people watching. I don't think we have to worry. Yeah, I don't think we need to try to lure in them soccer moms by eliminating soccer kicks.
But the Diamond Cup is awesome. I think I have been kicked in the nuts in every single fight, and it doesn't bother me. One time, Roundtree did it at the end of the fight, and I was just so ready for the fight, and it hurt, too. It's probably the only time that it hurt. But I was so ready for that fucking fight to be over with. I was like, man, I'm just gonna ride it out, dude. Ride it out.
Fuck that it. Dude kicked so fucking hard.
Yeah, imagine getting kicked in the dick. I was like, huh.
And you caught him right when he came out of Thailand, too.
Yeah.
When he had that Thai style, like real light on that front leg.
Man, I was like, hey, man, what are you doing, man?
That was so impressive. Damn, that dude he's one of my favorite guys to watch because when he gets rolling and his technique is on, man, he's terrifying.
I think it's up here for him.
Yep.
Like some fights he comes out, unfortunately, like he did against me. There's all the confidence in the world against that Modeskis or the guy who fucking stomped his knee out.
Yeah.
But then other fights, you know, I think he kind of gets into himself a little bit and, you know.
Well, he's gone on some times where he's thinking about retiring, you know. And you know as well as anybody that when you're 1 foot in, 1 foot out, it's not really the best.
Yeah.
You see guys that are like that, and like you see the decline in their performances. They just don't see the same anymore.
You know, train is hard. They don't diet right.
Did you see the Anthony Pettis fight, the Stevie Ray fight?
Yeah. We actually went. It was in Atlanta.
Was it?
Yeah.
That fight was interesting. He sent it to me. Stevie Ray sent it to me, and I watched it, and I was like, what are you doing here?
Yeah.
Like, that's like a body lock, and then he's got the arm captured, and he's using the forearm on the neck. So
I think he hurt his ribs.
Well, it's a neck crank, man. It's a neck crank. Watch how he does it. See, look, right arm goes to the side of the neck. Now watch. When he gets the grip, watch he gets the grip here, and he's using the leverage of his legs and then cranking against the neck. Watch this. Right here. It's a neck crank, man. Oh, it does look like he hurt his ribs, too.
Yeah.
He's holding on to his ribs.
What you're saying is...
I think he fucked everything up, though. I think he fucked it. But he shows the setup. He sent me the setup, too. Like, this is something that he does.
Oh, so this wasn't, like, on the fly?
No.
Let me squeeze and see what happens.
Oh, he's got the body lock. But watch when he gets the right forearm on the side of the neck... And then he clamps his arms together, and it's basically, look, it's a spinal lock.
Yeah.
Because it's crazy pressure. Look at that. Look at that on the neck, man.
Fuck.
It's probably also on the left side of his ribs because that's where the body lock is clamped down to. But he also has a twister finish in MMA. So he's, like, very familiar with those leverage positions where you're really cranking on the neck.
Bending your shit where it don't bend.
Twisters. You ever been caught one of those?
Hell yeah.
It's horrible.
I tap early, though. Fuck that.
It's a terrible position to be in.
It'll fuck your neck up. Dude, yeah. I fucked a lot of discs up in my neck. When I first started, no one told me don't be an asshole and not tap.
So
I'd be like getting choked out and, you know, hear, oh, shit, my neck hurts. And, man, for the longest time, I thought my trap or my neck was just tight on that side and I couldn't turn it. But then I went to that cellular performance place in Mexico and got stem cells in my thing. And, dude, it's made, you know.
Did you go to the place in Tijuana?
Yeah.
Ed Clay's place?
Yeah, yeah.
Shout out to Ed Clay.
Yeah.
I love that dude. Yeah, I love that he's doing that, but it's kind of crazy that you have to go to Tijuana because you can't do it in America.
I think it's the way they, not incubate, but like cultivate the stem cells, that they don't let you do it here, but they let you do it there.
So it had a big effect on you?
Man, night and day.
Really?
Yeah, I couldn't wrestle because you have to do all that, you know, head position. You can use your head when you wrestle. I just couldn't turn my neck all the way.
So did they go actually into your discs?
Yeah. So they like... I was like, man, you guys going to put me to sleep? They're like, no, because there's a nerve in there, and if we hit it, you have to let us know. I was like, dude, what the fuck am I going to do? I'll be fucking paralyzed. What are you talking about? And then, but yeah, so they like, they don't put you to sleep. They just kind of like dull it. Like, you can definitely feel the needle go in.
So dude, just some Novocaine?
I don't know.
Something like that.
It's not a topical. Like, I got an IV. Right. And, but dude, it was like they were pumping up a bike tire. It just like, it felt my neck just kind of like, I was like, ooh, I think I might have grown a little bit.
Well, that's what is exciting about stem cells with discs, is that they can regrow that disc tissue, which is the only time I've ever heard of anyone being able to do that. Because generally speaking, when you get degenerative discs, which is, I have that, I have a bunch of discs that are smaller. They get smushed down from years of grappling. And I had a bulging disc in my neck once at one point that was pretty bad. That was like making my hands numb and shit like that.
Pushing on nerves and shit.
But now they're able to shoot it into the discs and you can regenerate the tissue. So it actually gives you that cushion in between your discs.
Yeah, it like reinflated it.
Yeah.
And I was like, and they were like, I mean, because I was staying at a hotel and they're like, you can go home, but I wouldn't recommend that you do because that shit's going to hurt when that, you know, whatever the medication wears off. And I was like, dude, this shit doesn't hurt, you know. Maybe I'll just, all right, I'll take your word, dude. There was, I was sitting in my room, he's like, call us when it starts to hurt. Like, they knew what was up. And so I was like, all right. And so, dude, that's just started to wear off. And dude, I was like on my hands and knees, like there was just no position that I could like put my neck where the shit didn't hurt. And I was like, man, y'all come on with it, man, give me something to put me down. And the next day though, it was like zero pain, you know, nothing.
So how long did it take before you could start training again after
that? They told me 6 weeks because when you get the stem cells, if you keep like doing stuff that like inflames you, the stem cells are going to attack that instead of like the current issue.
Oh,
so they're like, just chill for 6 weeks, let the stem cells do their thing, and then, you know, you go back to training like progressively.
Is it hard for you to do that though, to like just chill?
I can't, like, I haven't stopped moving since I
sat. You're not a chill dude.
But I am chill. I just like, I can't ever like sit still.
And so 6 weeks later you started to go and you could immediately feel that it was,
yeah, like I, that same thing was happening, like my fingers were going numb. Like, you know, I had to always like pop and crack my neck, which is probably like the last thing that you should do in that situation. But man, zero neck pain. I can turn my neck all the way. My fingers don't tingle.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
It's exciting. I just wish we could fucking do it right here. Like, dude, I don't know what the holdup is.
Yeah. You know, I don't know. I think that the medical community is not maybe looking for to, like, get you better, but keep you coming back kind of thing. So
I don't know if that's what it is. Maybe it's the issue is how long it takes to get FDA approval. I mean really all it would take is someone of high profile, like some president or something like that, that went and got it done and was singing the virtues of it and said, hey, let's fucking fast track this shit.
You know, Kobe Bryant tore his Achilles, got that, came back. So like the extent of how much it works on like other stuff, I don't know, but Clearly the shit works.
Yeah, it works. I've done a lot of things with stem cells. I had a full-length rotator cuff tear that disappeared. 6 months later, really? I got an MRI. No rotator cuff tear. He was like, how's your shoulder feel? I'm like, feels pretty fucking good.
Yeah.
And he goes, okay, we're going to do another MRI. And he goes, and the doctor came into the room. He's like, I never seen anything like this in my fucking life.
Is this the right arm?
He goes, you don't have a tear anymore. He goes, it's gone. And I go, really? He goes, yeah. He goes, I would have told you just a few years ago that you needed surgery. Like, you're going to fuck your shoulder up. You're going to develop arthritis. He goes, now you don't even have a tear. It's gone.
Really?
Like, I have zero problems with this shoulder now. But at one point in time, it was like, it was always sore. It would hurt all the time. It was always something
always
wrong with it.
Always aching and shit.
Yeah, now nothing.
Yeah.
Would you do anything with it?
I don't know if it'll like, cause I they had to cut my meniscus out, part of it anyways. And so I did, I got it, the stem cells in there, really just to like reduce like the inflammation and speed the shit up. But I don't think that it'll like regrow my meniscus or whatever. But I think as far as like discs and like stuff like that,
yeah,
dude, it fucking works wonders.
One thing they are doing with meniscus is they're doing meniscus transplants. So they're taking like a cadaver's meniscus and they're replacing yours with a cadaver's. And
really?
Apparently as long as you get that, like you're at your age, you can still do that. But I think when you get older, like for older folks, I don't think it works. I think there's a certain amount of blood flow that has to exist in mm-hmm. in that area.
And that's another thing they were saying down there is like down here when we get the stem cells, we can like stress them out. Like if we're going to put them in a low blood, low oxygen environment in your body or like less blood flow or whatever, we can like stress it out, and the ones that aren't going to live already die, and we can replace them. So you're getting like the exact number or as close to as you can with the injections. Because sometimes, like, oh, this is 100 million, but you know,
right,
50 million of them died already,
right?
You know,
yeah. Well, they're doing stuff in, I know they're doing stuff like that in Colombia. You know, there's that bioaccelerator place in Colombia, and then there's in Panama. Dr. Neil Reardon, I had him on my show before, and he's written these papers on it, and he's one of the leading experts, and he's actually down in Dallas, but he runs this clinic in Panama because you can't do it here. Like everything that he wants to do here, he can do some stuff here, but he can't do anything here like he wants to do. You gotta
Why
go
do
to
you
Panama.
Think? I don't think it's lack. I don't know. I don't think the FDA, I mean, they approved the vaccine and like, you know,
yeah.
6 months, so why I can't get stem cells?
Well, yeah, like I said, it's almost like someone very important, like a president type dude, needs to fast track it. It's been going on for a long time. Like people have been using stem cells now to heal injuries for decades. It's not a new thing, and the efficacy is not challenged. Like that shit works. I've done it.
Sure.
Know it works.
Yeah, me too.
You know it works too. Like nothing else. That's what's crazy. And I think we're probably just at the tip of the iceberg. I think like 30 years from now, that's going to be old school. They're going to be they'll have developed something really wild.
Yeah, fuck stem cell. You can just have a whole new one. Fucking,
well, I
go.
Think what they're going to be able to do is regenerate all kinds of tissue and then reverse aging. Reversing aging is just around the corner. Which is going to be wild.
Man, you got to die, dude.
You're hot old ladies all of a sudden going to want some dick.
Yeah. But, dude, you got to have a lifespan, dude.
Well, you're still going to have a lifespan. You know, you're still vulnerable. Still vulnerable to sickness and still vulnerable to injury. But imagine if you could live a full, like, healthy, active life until you die. Instead of being, you know, you see 90-year-old people that are just all fucked up and, like, what kind of life is that?
Yeah, I told my people, like, the first time I shit myself uncontrollably, just, you know, take me out there. I'll be okay with it. I promise you I will. Just fucking whatever.
I think for a lot of people, they don't ever want to let go. They want to keep going as long as possible. And then there's also like the hope that they're going to be able to fix things. Like this reversing aging thing. They're able to do that now in certain animals. They could do it in mice and they can prolong their lifespan by 50-100%.
They should just do DMT so they die once already. It's like, oh, you know, not that bad. You just got to accept it.
Yeah, but what if that's not what happens when you die? You know, DMT might just be some very unusual burst of these chemicals that you can get and introduce into your body, but that's not really what happens when you die. When you die, it's just...
Lights go off.
Lights go off. That could be possible, too.
Yeah.
I don't know.
We all find out one day.
Do you have any regrets that you didn't start fighting, like, when you were young?
I wish I... Well, look, it's funny because... Like, I started playing football before all that concussion shit came out.
Mm-hmm.
But all you heard about was, like, boxers with, you know, head injuries or head trauma, CTE and shit, before it was called CTE. So I always favored individual sports over team sports. I fucking hated team sports. I only started playing football because my older brother played football, and then I realized that girls like football players. And then I realized, oh, I'm kind of good at football, so fuck. All right. But I asked my mom, I was like, can I box? And she was like, no, because you're going to fucking get brain damage and you're going to ruin your face. And I paid money for your braces and your teeth. Now you're going to fuck your face up. And then I was like, all right. But then, meanwhile, you know, she let me go run full speed, into another human being who's also running full speed, you know, with like a piece of plastic on my head. Like when I first started playing, I was like 7 years old, and then it's like one size fits all. My shoulder pads fucking came out to here, and my helmet was fucking wobbling around. So like, you know, definitely wasn't like the 1950s, but it ain't like it is now.
Right.
You know, so the only times I've ever been like knocked unconscious is playing football, which is a pretty scary fucking experience because you lose time. The first time I did it, we were doing a drill. I was like 12 years old. Two guys, 10 yards apart. There's a cone off to the side in the middle. And you literally run full speed and smash each other.
That's the drill?
That's the drill. It's like an angle tackling drill. One guy's on offense, the running back. Everybody else is on defense. And so they say, go. You got sprint 5 yards, boom, at an angle. And, you know, car collision. But dude, I hit this kid, and I fucking got up. I was woozy. Got to the back of line, and just boom. You know, it's kind of like Little Giants. You wake up, everybody's around you. Fucking, it's like, oh, it's okay, dude. He does that to everybody. I was like, fuck, y'all let me go with him, dude. Y'all fucking, y'all don't like me, man. And then when I was in college, I was running down on kickoff. Are you familiar with football?
Yeah.
So I was running down on a kickoff, and at the time, you can't even do this anymore, but they'd put, like, the offense and defensive linemen in a wedge, and the dude with the ball would just, they would just, like, fucking clear house. So I was just like, fuck it, and just closed my eyes and dove in there.
Oh.
And, like, my neck, and it was, like, on the far sideline. My next cognitive memory is, like, I'm walking around on our sideline. I'm like, dude, how the fuck did I get here? I was just over there. Now I'm here.
Wow.
And then like 5 minutes later, like, all right, kickoff team, go again. I was like, dude, I don't know if I should do that. But you know, at the time, it's like, dude, you can't be a pussy, dude. Just fucking go.
Mm.
And now they're like, oh, dude.
Now
know,
they stop people from doing shit like that.
Yeah,
right?
They're like,
if you get KO'd now in a football game, do they just stop?
If
and
you,
get you
if
out?
They even suspect you of having a concussion, they take your helmet and you're done. Back, and there's, you know, when I played, like shit like that was encouraged. Wow. Oh, he doesn't want to play anymore? Pfft, bitch.
You know, really? I'm
pussy. He's like, oh, actually, you know, that guy's actually, you know, a little bit smarter than the rest of us.
Isn't it crazy that it's so recent that they've figured all this out?
Yeah. And, well, I think the big turning point, there was a guy named Junior Seau, who was a linebacker for the Chargers.
Committed suicide.
And they, you know, they don't know if you have CTE till after you die and they study your brain. And they're like, his brain's not right, you know? And so then that after that, I think, is when they started, you know, changing the rules and stuff. Because, you know, the football, as it's played today, doesn't really look like how it was. Like, the big hits was encouraged. Blind sides were encouraged. It's like, oh, fuck, dude, you saw what I just did to that guy. Fucking, you know, laugh about it. All right, now you get kicked out of the game, and you have to sit out the following game as well.
Really? So they're trying to figure out a way to make the craziest, most non-safe sport ever safe.
But I was like, you know, so like a lot of people were like ignorant back then, but now you know, like the risks that you're taking. So
yeah,
sign the waiver and go.
Sign the waiver, and also, you know, it's a opportunity for greatness.
Right? Yeah,
that's the thing. It's like you will take that risk, but if you become a superstar, the rewards are pretty substantial. I mean, if you're a superstar in the NFL and you can bang out 5-6 years, like you make a substantial amount of money.
Like if I knew then what I knew now, would I still play football? Absolutely. There's nothing you could have done to stop me from playing outside of an injury. It's like, yeah, dude, I loved football. I like everything that came with football. I love the lifestyle of football. And, you know, at the time I thought I was going to make a lot of money playing football. So, you know, yeah, I'll take the risk. And, you know, same thing with fighting. Like, oh, you worried about your brain? I mean, we'll cross that bridge when we get there.
You seem fine now.
Yeah. Well, I think mushrooms help. NAD helps.
Yeah.
I guess that's like preventative stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know.
Do you, like, keep an eye on it, though? Like, do you, like, check in on yourself? Like, how are we doing? We all right here?
Yeah, like, especially, like, when I get tired, I feel like I'm, like, thinking slow. Like, I have to, like, think about what I'm thinking about.
But everybody's like that when they're tired.
I'm a fucking... But I hope it's just being tired, I was like, man, let me go take a nap or something. Fucking.
There's a dude that I knew that was a fighter that retired, and he definitely sparred too hard, and he definitely had some rough fights. He got KO'd a couple of times, and when I was around him, he seemed okay until he had a drink. Like, a drink.
Yeah.
And I was like, it was crazy. Like, one drink, two drinks in, it was like he was obliterated. Like, he had drank a whole case of beer. It was crazy.
Yeah, I hope I don't get like that. But now, I don't know.
Right now, you seem...
He's learned sign language or something.
No signs at all. Like, he seemed totally normal. But I think it's different for everybody, right? There's like a genetic predisposition. It's like APOE4.
They said that about CTEs. Like, mm-hmm. We don't even know, and I haven't like done any like research on it lately, so I don't know if they've like found anything out. But I know a few years ago, like, dude, we don't even know if you're like genetically predisposed to getting this anyways. And you know, the hits and football hits and tackles and stuff like make it move faster, you know. So you know you're feeling it at 40, 50 instead of 70 or 80.
Right. When you go back and you know, if you think about like your times playing football, like your great times versus your great wins in fighting, like what is more satisfying to you?
There's no drug, there's no anything that you could do to replicate the emotions and feelings after knocking a motherfucker out. And I'm not like talking about like getting on top and hitting him till the ref pulls you off. Like one punch, boom, he's, you know, jello on the ground. Like you might have killed that guy. There's no better feeling. And I've won, like, when I played football, we went playing the national championship and had a pretty big play at the end of the game that kind of sealed it. But even that, the last game of my college career doesn't equate to knocking out Hafe on the Tall the way I did. It just doesn't. It's one-on-one. It's you versus me. And I just did that to you. Done that's quite a few drugs. I've had quite a few big moments.
Yeah.
Other side of the coin, there's no fucking lower feeling than getting your ass whooped in front of, you know, not only the crowd, but the people on TV. And, but I'll take it, dude. I'll fucking run the risk of that versus the high you get after a knockout or a win any day.
Do you remember the feeling of like your first loss where you're like, oh, geez, this is different?
Yeah, because my first loss was to Machida, and I feel like I beat Machida. I just so happened to fight him in Brazil. And I think that he thinks that he lost because, you know, before they read the scorecards, his head's all low and he's, you know,
yeah,
kind of pouting. And he's like, oh, winner by split decision, and Machida. And all of a sudden, he's like, wow.
But that was not a loss like a... You know, that was like not like Thiago Santos' loss. It wasn't, you know.
Yeah. I think.
Because
You
could have won that fight.
Yeah.
I remember that fight. You could have won that fight.
I had his back. Yeah, I was in that fight. But I kind of liked, or told myself anyways, that I kind of liked pushing myself. Like, I liked the challenge, you know. And, two fights later, you know, he's fucking fighting for the championship. I'm like, mm-hmm. And to be honest, like, I think that's kind of the fight that put me on the map, even though it was a loss. You know, I think the people liked, like, these two big motherfuckers just stood in the middle and just swung on each other till one couldn't anymore. And, you know, from the fans' perspective, I think they really liked that. So,
yeah, it was definitely
good and bad.
A big fight. But it's not like a fight, like a serious loss.
Yeah. Roundtree was pretty devastating. Just cause like there's something about that day where I was just like, dude, I don't want to fight. I do not want to fuck a fight. I'm going to do it anyways, but don't really want to be here right now.
What do you think that is?
I have no idea.
Cause I mean, all the preparation, all the training.
Dude, there's some fights like when I made my debut, I had zero nerves. And as soon as my feet touched the canvas and I felt like how grippy it is, I was like, dude, he's dead. This motherfucker's out of here. I know I'm finna win. But that Roundtree fight in particular, I remember walking to the cage like, maybe someone puts a banana peel out here and I fucking slip. Like, fuck, dude, I don't. Can we do this tomorrow?
Like, is that the only time you've ever felt like that?
To that extreme, yeah.
Yeah?
Yeah.
What do you think that was?
I don't know. And I was really confident going into that fight because I didn't think that he could wrestle. I was watching film. I was like, dude, he's never like just flat. Like he's dropped a lot of people, but that's he just dropped them. Like he never like knocked them unconscious. So I was like, all right, even if I do eat one, I'll fucking still be alive and be able to fight and shit. But I don't know, dude. I just woke up on the wrong side of the bed and I was like, fuck.
That's what you were talking about earlier when you're talking about Khabib and Usman and these guys that like every single time they're mentally there.
Yeah.
And that's probably one of the hardest parts of the sport.
Gotta be. And there's other fights where like, I'm finna get in this dude's ass and it's gonna be hell for him. So I don't know what that is.
Have you ever gone to a sports psychologist?
Yeah, they all say different shit and, you know. One guy said, just be happy to be here. And I'm just like, that's preposterous. I would just, no, dude. I used to make fun of people. Like, oh, dude, he's just happy to be here. He's for sure finna get right. His ass beat or whatever. Or don't worry about the outcome. It's like, no, dude, I am worried about the fucking outcome because that's half my money. You know, you lose a fight, I could get cut. Yes, the outcome absolutely matters. Stop talking to me.
It's another thing I hate about the sport. The win-lose bonus. I don't like that at all.
Yeah,
I think you should get played. I think you should be, it's not like... No one is trying harder because you're going to get your win bonus. You're trying to fucking win. You're in a goddamn cage fight. I don't think it incentivizes. And I think with the judging is so erratic. Like sometimes they're so wrong.
Yeah, I feel like I won my last fight too. But the judges said I didn't. I was like, man, how? What?
That was a very close fight. Yeah. I thought you won it too. Yeah.
So I like what I mean. What,
but then you lose half your money.
Yeah,
which is crazy.
I don't care about like the loss column as much as I do, because like I invest. You know, I don't buy stupid shit with my money. So it's not like I was gonna blow it. Anyways, dude, how many houses could I have bought with you know my win bonus? How much more money could I invested in like mid-states and oil and gas companies and stuff like that?
Yeah.
So I'm like, kind of fucks me up.
It's so hard because so many fights are so goddamn close. Like today I watched Brandon Moreno versus Davison Figueiredo, the rematch. And Figueiredo won the rematch. And I was watching and I was like, man, what a close fucking fight. And Brandon thought he won. And I'm like, the fact that he's not getting half his money is crazy.
Yeah.
I mean, he
fought a hell of a fight.
Fought his ass off. And I feel the same way about Max Holloway versus Volkanovski in the second fight. That fight was so goddamn close. It was so close. Like, how could you take a man's half his money away based on some subjective opinions of whether or not he won the fight?
What do you think the answer is for, like, the judging? You think it should be more judges, open scoring?
Yeah, I think both of those things would be good. I think more judges for sure. I think five judges would be the right way to do it. I think Glory uses four or five. Kickboxing, I think that would be better. I don't think three's enough because, like, sometimes you'll have like two people that get it totally wrong and then one person gets it right.
Did you see Caitlin Vieira and Holly Holm?
Yes, I did. Yeah.
I thought Holly Holm won like three or four rounds. Like, how did what's like?
Yeah, I have to go and watch that again. I have to go and watch that again to try to figure out what, you know.
I like the open scoring. Let me know. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, I play a football game. I play a basketball game. I know the score of the game.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. The worry about that is that someone might go in like Devin Haney versus Kambosos, right? Go into that final round knowing that you're...
Bring back yellow cards or whatever. Yeah. You're going to get penalized, motherfucker, if you run. If you don't engage, you're going to fucking lose a point.
See, yellow card was a great part of Pride. Pride was a great organization. But they use yellow cards sometimes when people are just being strategic. And smart. Like, they just wanted entertainment.
Yeah.
There's something about... Because then, like, some guys, they're just being smart. But then you have fights like the Rose Namajunas, Carla Esparza fight, where you're like, what the fuck is happening here? Nothing's happening. Like, they both should have got yellow cards. Like, what are you doing?
Yeah.
Like, you know, a million people are watching right now? Come on.
And you saw Yair and Korean Zombie?
Yes. Woo!
Yeah, you think if... I don't know if the zombie knew if he was up all those rounds because it was a close fight. But, you know, he was up like, I think, four rounds. And so he was like trying to push it because I don't think he knew that he was up.
Right.
And then got knocked out in 10 seconds with 10 seconds left in the thing.
What crazy elbow, too. That was nuts.
I think, what do you think is, what do you think the mechanism is to, you know, how some dudes get knocked out, they go stiff, and they're like fucking, you know, locked out like roadkill or, like when they go like rubber chicken, what why do you think the two different things happen?
It's a good question. It's like what's going on in the brain?
Because that's scary. The way he like fell and fucking like
rubber chicken
shit,
scary.
Dude.
Yeah.
Fucking
but roadkill scary too. The when the guys stiffen up and just
but
bounce.
You know he's alive.
I guess
His muscles are fucking seized up. He's like his heart's still beating. You know?
I guess I don't know. They're both scary. When you get shut off, getting shut off is fucking scary. And one of the things about the UFC that's really interesting is that no one's ever died. You know, I mean, there's been so many deaths in boxing during the same time period. And obviously, boxing has many, many different promotions, and the UFC only has one.
Yeah.
But the only deaths that I know of in MMA are either people with a pre-existing condition or people who fought overseas, and some of them have been from weight cuts. There's been, like, death because of that. But it's interesting that, relatively speaking, MMA is more safe than boxing, even though you think it's not, because the knockouts are so crazy. Like a head kick knockout is crazy.
Yeah.
Like that one that you landed, the soccer kick, like, holy
shit. But it's
shit.
Over. You know, it's not like that dude took like six of those. You know,
that's true too.
You know, boxing, I feel like they take a lot more.
That's
especially
true
like the way they train too. Like, mm-hmm. I'm like, dude, you motherfuckers, it's pretty archaic how you guys are training. How you guys are training
that's
like Neanderthals.
Yeah, they beat the fuck out of each other sometimes. You know,
and it really just be one. Like everybody else is there for
mm-hmm.
him, and
right.
he beats the fuck out of all of them.
Yeah, and you're getting brain damage.
Yeah.
Even though you just paid as a sparring partner, you're getting fight brain damage. Yeah. When you spar, do you spar hard? Like, how do you spar?
I always spar with bubble gloves.
Yeah?
Yeah. So, like, we throw, but mm-hmm. I'm not going to try to knock you out.
Right.
You know? And, you know, my training partners, you know, they respect the game, too. So, yeah, we're getting in there. We're fighting. You know, it's getting, you know, chaotic in there. But I'm not worried about getting knocked out in training or getting hurt in training and then showing up to a fight with, like, a compromised, you know, chin or,
yeah,
you know, getting knocked out in practice and then still showing up to the fight where you, dude, you know, you should probably just pull out. It'll be okay.
That does happen, man. That does happen. Sometimes guys fight and they're fucked. They're fucked.
From before the fight even
mm-hmm.
starts, you know?
Yeah. Do you remember when Travis Luter fought Marvin Eastman? He just touched him on the chin.
Yeah.
And Marvin just went flat out unconscious.
Isn't that crazy?
Turned out he had been KO'd twice in training.
Shit.
Yeah.
I think it's crazy how someone can go like their whole career and just be like, fuck, he's durable, his fucking chin. And then the next day,
Chuck Liddell.
A stiff breeze. Like, dude, what the fuck was that, dude? He's taking a dive. No. He's asleep right now.
Chuck Liddell was a good example of that.
Yeah.
You know, and do you see the Chuck Liddell Tito Ortiz fight?
The last one?
Yeah. It's like, whoa.
Yeah.
Sad.
Would really hope to not, you know, fight past like 40 or whatever.
It's not even past 40 because Randy won the title past 40 and he was great and he's still great today.
But he's like a wrestler, you know, he wasn't like out there trading. Come
but
here,
he was out there trading too. I mean, he got knocked out by Chuck, you know, and then came back and beat Tim Sylvia, knocked down Tim Sylvia in the first round. It's just, some people are more durable for whatever reason, genetically. And then some people, it's like the amount of sparring they took in training. But Chuck is one of the best examples of it because when Chuck was young, he was known for having like a granite chin.
Oh, yeah.
You could just crack him and he would just fire back at you. And he knocked a lot of people out just because he could take a shot so well. And then one day, it just stopped working.
It's crazy.
Yeah. And then the knockouts came, you know, like Rampage KO'd him, and then other people were KO'ing him, and then it just got to a point where it's just like one good punch, and you would just go out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I feel like your chin is like a pitcher's arm. That motherfucker can only take so much. You got a limited number of pitches or, you know, shots that you can take before that motherfucker just ain't.
The way Chuck explained it to me is like your brain is protecting you. It's like your brain knows you're so tough, and it's like, hey, we got to protect this guy. He's stupid. He's going to keep getting hit, so let's just shut off.
Man, I would like to believe that's like real rationale, but I don't know. That's
it's probably not.
No.
It's like probably way more sinister.
Yeah, your fucking brain swelling inside your skull right now is what's happening.
Well, that's the saddest part, right? When you see the speech patterns change. You know, there's quite a few guys I've seen their speech patterns change. You see their struggle to try to form sentences.
Yeah.
You see that slowing of the words. And sometimes their movements change. That's one of the weirder ones. I've noticed guys, like, they've been KO'd a few times, and then I watch them train, and I see they take, like, shorter steps. They take, like, it's almost
like... They're
off
balance and
shit.
Yeah,
like, their balance is not right, or there's no fluidity.
Mm-hmm.
Their body movements are all... almost herky jerky.
It's weird when they start a sentence and then they're like, and then they, you know, it's like, yeah, a long pause. I'm
they
like,
forget, like, they're high.
Are you good? Like, fuck it. Yeah. I think you need to.
They start talking about things again that they just talked about a couple minutes ago. They forgot they said it and they said it again.
Dude, I do that. I retell stories, but like Larry's like, oh, did I ever tell you about the times? Like, yeah, motherfucker, you told me that. You know,
30 seconds 2 months.
No, nah, not like 30 seconds, but like just a long time, you know, a few months ago. I'm like, yeah, fuck, dude, I don't have any more stories. Fuck. I gotta go out there and
normal.
Do some wild shit.
That's normal. That's normal. That's just life. And also, you know, you gotta think of how many different times you talk to people, how many different people you talk to. You're constantly traveling to fights, constantly training and meeting people. Like, your interactions with people are much more varied than the average person.
Sure. Yeah. Making me feel better. I appreciate it.
No, you did. You're good, man. You're good. Listen, Eric, it's been great to sit down and talk to you. It's been great watching your fights, man. I'm a fan. You're always exciting. It's always a lot of fun.
Right,
and
appreciate
you're a cool
it,
dude
brother.
To talk to. So right. I enjoyed it.
Appreciate it.
Good luck to you and everything, man. And next five fights, whatever it is, I hope I'm calling them.
All right. Or we get the top, man. I don't think we've ever won one of the fights. Actually, I did. I beat Darren Stewart, and I think they ran over time.
Yeah,
so I was
that
like,
happens.
Yeah,
sometimes
get to
people
talk to...
get mad at me. I'm like, hey, that's not me. They tell me in the truck whether or not I can talk to somebody. It's
I was
nothing.
Like, yeah, I get to talk to Joe. And they're like, oh, no, fuck out of here. I was
It'll
like,
happen.
But.
Hopefully. Well,
no,
thank
well.
You, though.
Appreciate
you, brother.
It. Thank
Take
you.
Care. Bye, everybody.